Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 o'clock. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Following this show at 5 o'clock, you got Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, followed by the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Thursday morning. That means Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, Triple Play Thursday.
That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Get your requests in now. We'll do them later, 312-981-7200. It is time for our bi-weekly visit with Dan Feinberg. I know it seems like we just talked to him, because we did. He made a special appearance on the show last week to talk about the Emmy nominations. So he's back, though, for his regular visit. So we've got a ton of TV to talk about. It's always great to talk to Dan. Dan Feinberg, you can read him in The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always great to talk to Dan. Lots of TV stuff to talk about. Really saddened to hear that Rutger Hauer passed away. One of my favorite actors. Just fantastic, great, incredible screen presence, terrific actor. It had so many iconic roles. He mostly played strange dudes and villains and stuff like that, but truly one of my favorites. And he was only 75 years old, passed away, so we're going to pay tribute to the great Rutger Hauer. We'll remember him, talk about his career, talk about the so many great movies that he's been in and so many great performances that he gave. But, yeah, really saddened to hear the passing of Rutger Hauer. So we'll remember him a little bit later on. As we get closer to the release of Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we have a pop culture guide to Charles Manson. Considering Charles Manson, that's what the movie is kind of about. It's about old school Hollywood, and it's about the Charles Manson murders. We also have some of the unhealthiest fast food burgers, which some of them are hilarious. So we'll get into all of that. That's what's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A little bit later on, obviously, we're going to pay tribute to Rutger Hauer. And if you guys want to jump in with your favorite Rutger Hauer memories or performances or movies, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. My great producer is Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick.
Kind of sad to hear about, very sad to hear about Rutger Hauer, huh?
Yeah, it was one of those moments. I woke up, I looked at my phone, and I gasped. Audibly gasped.
Same thing happened to me. I was in bed, and I was sleeping, and I woke up and I looked at my feed and I saw like all the Rutger Hauer stuff and I was like, you gotta be kidding me, man.
Yeah, and it was just so out of nowhere. I guess I hadn't really thought about Rutger Hauer in a while.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't worked in a long time.
Yeah, so I just assumed he was fine.
They didn't specify the cause of death, but they said that there was an illness, that he was suffering from an illness for a while. He was only 75. He was married to his second wife for 50 years. They were married for 50 years. Yeah. His first wife, he had a daughter, Aisha Hauer, who is actually an actress as well. Just so many memorable performances. I mean, obviously the first thing that pops into my mind is Blade Runner. That's the first one. I mean,
and it seems like from a lot of the tributes that his fans have been pouring out, that's just peak Rutger Hauer in terms of that's at least what he'll be remembered for largely, is that speech.
Yeah, and which he wrote, the Tears in the Rain speech. He added that stuff to, and Ridley Scott didn't know it. That take that was used in the movie, it was the first time he you know, he just launched into it. And that's the take that they used in the movie. And it's also kind of eerie and strange that he dies in, Rutger Hauer dies in 2019. Blade Runner takes place in 2019. So Roy Batty dies in 2019.
It's oddly poetic.
It's just weird. Yeah, it is kind of poetic, you know. I just was like, wow, it's 2019, and that's when Blade Runner takes place. Like, this whole year has been Blade Runner year for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then, like, for Rutger Hauer to die the same year that Roy Batty dies in Blade Runner. Little strange. But anyway, but we're going to remember Rutger Hauer. So many great, memorable performances, and he could be really scary, man. We're going to get...
Yeah, he was an intense guy.
Yeah.
So much fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, he will be missed. He was great, but man, you know, he left behind a bunch of great stuff. So, and we'll reflect upon that a little bit later on. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, man?
Doing very well.
Good. You get to see any of the Cubs game today?
No, I didn't. I was watching the Mueller testimony
for
quite a while, and then finally crashed and slept the rest of the day. So
yeah, I slept through. I got to listen to a little bit of the game. The Cubs won.
Yeah, they
changed pace.
They won on the road.
Yeah.
How did that happen? The Cubs won on the road against the San Francisco Giants, the hottest team in the majors right now. But they won. And Lester was sick and couldn't pitch, so Chatwood started.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so everybody was like, "Oh boy, they're playing the Giants. They have a terrible road record right now, the Cubs." And now Lester's sick, so we've got Chatwood starting, and he pitched fine. And they won. That's a good thing. And they're now so this is going to be a fun stretch for you, Vic.
Yep.
Because they're playing in Milwaukee.
Right. And my partner is a Brewer fan.
That's right.
So I didn't get a message from my buddy in San Francisco. I don't know. They're just crickets.
Nothing. oddly quiet after today's game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always love it when the Cubs play Milwaukee and I get to hear your stories about how you and Jeannie deal with it.
Yeah, I know.
It should be fun. 7:10 first pitch, and they're at Wrigley North, right? They're in at Miller Park, right?
Let's see.
Wrigley North.
Yep, they are. They sure.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
No, Wrigley you've never North. Heard Wrigley North.
Oh, it's so blue. It's blue. There's a lot of fans up there.
There are. Oh, when the Cubs play the Brewers, it's Wrigley North, man. Although I can't go there, and we all know the story. Ron Santo forbids me from going to Milwaukee ever again to see a Cubs because I'm 0-9. So when Ron Santo tells you can't go to Milwaukee to watch the Cubs play the Brewers, I haven't been back since, and that was like 2006. So, there you go. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Dan Feinberg's going to join us, and we're going to talk TV.
TV party tonight! We're going to have a TV party tonight! All right! We're going to have a TV party, all right!
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your questions in now. We'll play them later. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Also coming up, we are going to pay tribute to Rutger Hauer, who passed away at the age of 75. Tremendous actor and just all around one of my favorite people that's ever been in movies. So we're gonna pay tribute to him and talk about some of the other some of the films, the essential films that you need to see for Rutger Hauer, and much more coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And all right, it is that time. Every 2 weeks, we talk with our good friend Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Always a lot of TV to talk about, and let's welcome Dan to the show. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Nick.
How are you?
Oh, busy, 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 barely treading water, maybe not even treading water.
All right, well, tell everybody where you are.
I am currently in Beverly Hills at the luxurious Beverly Hilton Hotel, home of the semi-annual, biannual, whichever one means twice a year, Television Critics Association press tour. This is the summer installment, and for listeners who are new to our conversations about the press tour is basically twice a year in July and in January. The various networks broadcast, cable, streaming, PBS, et cetera, meet with the nation's TV critics, 200 plus, strong, and present their wares for the months to come. So we just started on, technically we started on Monday night because National Geographic threw a party that featured puppies. So if you're going to start a press tour, that's a good way to do it. And we are 2 full days into the press tour thus far.
All right. Well, let's hear about the highlights. Now, why were there puppies at the, did they also have Gordon Ramsay there?
They did not. Gordon Ramsay was on a panel the next day, and there were people from Gordon Ramsay's new show, and there was a strange booth where if you wanted to, you could get a spice mix that had something to do with Gordon Ramsay's new show. I don't fully understand. The answer on puppies is National Geographic is very smart and aware that a really, really good way to get TV critics, but also, if we're being perfectly honest, almost anybody in a good mood is to have at least one corner where there are 10 puppies who you can just sort of pass around and sit hugging and, you know, whatever you want to do with a little adorable puppy. So people started off in a good mood, which is always fun because eventually people will always get in a vaguely frustrated mood about things. So
the puppies were not a tie-in to any show. They just had puppies there.
This time around, they were not a tie-in to any particular show, though on Tuesday, there were multiple panels with full-grown dogs, one from the A&E Networks family and one from National Geographic. Dog Impossible, I believe, is the National Geographic one. Uh-huh. So there are definitely dogs in the National Geographic family, but it really is a, I don't want to say tradition, but it's a thing that the publicist networks know that a good way to get critics, or really, again, anyone in a good mood, is to have a puppy corner at your party. So, yeah. Like, last press tour ended with an Amazon party that just had puppies. And so Phoebe Waller-Bridge was there to promote the new season of Fleabag, and Phoebe Waller-Bridge sat in a corner playing with the puppy, just sitting and playing with the puppy for over 45 minutes, just sitting there entranced by a puppy. So,
wow, I'm fascinated by this. I really am. That's pretty unbelievable. So it's become a regular thing then at TSA, TCA.
It is a thing where people know that it's a reliable way to, they produce Serenity, they produce people having embarrassing stories of getting peed on by puppies. Certainly, a couple years ago, my colleague Leslie was peed on by one of the puppies at one of the events. It's unavoidable. They're puppies. It's not their fault. They're just being puppies.
Right.
No one has ever walked into and out of a party at press tour saying, I wanted to go to this party, but they had puppies and left. So it's just safe.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, what else besides? So, the panel that Gordon Ramsay was on. What was the gist of that? It was his show and other shows as well, or?
Well, it was his new Nat Geo show, Uncharted, which premiered, I believe, over the weekend. I have not myself had the chance to watch it, but it was him talking about basically the latest part of the ever unfolding and evolving Gordon Ramsay empire, and this one is more of a travel show, more of a Gordon Ramsay learns about other cultures show. So it's really and truly it's Gordon Ramsay doing the Tony Bourdain thing.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Which,
yeah.
You know, I don't think it's as natural a fit for Gordon Ramsay as it was for Tony Bourdain, but I don't think that when Tony Bourdain started doing it, it seemed like it was a natural fit. I mean, he was the crazy, wild rock and roll food guy, and then he gradually transitioned so that it was less and less and less about food, and that was his transition. And Gordon Ramsay has done something similar, where he started off as he's the guy who swears at people in his kitchen, and he's crazy and wild and basically a caricature of himself. But as we've gradually gotten to know him better, if you can truly get to know someone on the basis of 7 or 8 reality TV shows, he's shown that he's more mellow than that and more thoughtful. And so this is his attempt to expand his brand. And it doesn't look bad. I just haven't had the time because busy.
Yeah. Well, how did he end up not doing this show on Fox? Because it's just he basically runs Fox. There's like 3 nights a week with nothing but Gordon Ramsay shows on Fox.
He does run Fox. The thing you have to remember is that Fox, the National Geographic has the same parent company or was owned by the Fox Corporation, but now is owned by Disney because everyone owns everyone. It's all very confusing. So there were somewhat tangential sibling studio things to begin with. I think that Fox is very happy with the amount of Gordon Ramsay they have on their air, but I think there's just a lot of Gordon Ramsay to go around.
Yeah, they're right.
I don't know where he finds the time.
Absolutely. All right, well, what were some of the other things that have happened in the past couple of days?
Well, yesterday, definitely, if I'm being honest, probably the highlights really were the puppies. They're Lord dogs, at least. We had two panels with dogs, and so basically it's people letting their dogs do tricks, and then people ask questions of the panelists, and the dogs just sit there, but everyone's really paying a lot of attention to the dogs, and it's as distractions go, it doesn't get much better than that. That was largely yesterday. There were some interesting things, and there were interesting National Geographic panels that had nothing to do with dogs. Dr. Bob Ballard, the guy who found the Titanic 40 years ago or 35 years ago, however long that was, he has a new project where he's attempting to find Amelia Earhart's plane. And so they made a big announcement about how they're doing that, what the technology is, what leads them to believe that they're going to succeed where other people have failed, et cetera, et cetera. So that seems interesting, and definitely it would be exciting for some people if they were to find Amelia Earhart's plane and also her remains. I mean, it's obviously a big question. I don't know if it's iconic in quite the same way that the Titanic was, but it's amazing. You know, the TCA is an organization with people of many ages, and when people get a few years younger than I am, they really don't have any awareness that the Titanic was a thing that was underwater and no one had any access to it for 70 years.
Right.
It was just this lost thing, and then suddenly it wasn't anymore, and now it's a James Cameron movie. So, you know, interesting to see how those things change. So that was yesterday. Today was a lot bigger. Today was HBO, and HBO is always the big hitter of the cable empire. So today we had HBO, and they had really just a ton of fairly big panels, including the upcoming extension of the Watchmen universe from Damon Lindelof, which is extremely intriguing. Mm-hmm. We've only seen one episode, but I can't say anything about it. So
of course,
it premieres in October, and surely we will have plenty to discuss. Are you a fan of the graphic novel?
It's one of the only. I don't read the comics or graphic novels or anything like that. But I did read Watchmen before the Zack Snyder movie came out because my friend insisted on it, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought that the Zack Snyder thing was like almost like panel for panel, except the ending. Pretty incredibly faithful to the book.
It is, which is true. I don't know if that necessarily makes it good, but it definitely was faithful. That was kind of their point, whereas this is Damon Lindelof taking the story years after and kind of extending it. So it's a little bit like a sequel, but really more a separate story within the same universe, but some overlapping characters. It's a pretty intriguing.
Okay.
Thing.
Well, listen, Dan, hang on. I want to get more about the HBO panel. Dan is live in Beverly Hills at the TCA, and we'll get more from him. And we got other TV to talk about as well. He's got some reviews that have popped up on The Hollywood Reporter, and you can read them at The Fine Print. It's Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. More TV talk right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. here on WGN. And we're here on a Thursday morning, and Rutger Hauer passed away, so we're going to pay tribute to him, and we've got other cool stuff to that we're going to do this morning as well. 312-981-7200. Right now, Dan Feinberg joins us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you. I sense that we talked too much about puppies to make it all the way through HBO in one segment.
Well, that's okay. Well, before we get to the HBO, back to the TCA, any thoughts on some of your favorite Rutger Hauer stuff?
Well, definitely when I was youthful, Lady Hawk was a big movie in my childhood, and I haven't watched it in 30 years, probably, vaguely terrified that it wouldn't hold up to my 7-year-old memories.
It's a it's a Richard Donner movie. That's all I'm going to say. But Rutger Hauer is great in it. You know, I don't think the movie's great, but I think he's great in it. And I could look at Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, for 10 hours straight. So.
Well, and at the time, I pretty much thought Matthew Broderick was the coolest person in the world. Whether or not that was true, at the moment, it seemed to be the case. I know that you are, of course, a huge fan of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So.
Yeah, yes, I am. Just so great. But so Lady Hawk, and obviously, obviously Blade Runner.
Certainly. No, he was in the 80s. He was iconic, and everything he was in seemed badass because he was in it, and I think that he gave such a presence, and he was such a strong and charismatic presence on the screen that sometimes it was easy to overlook how genuinely good he was in things. I mean, he's great in Blade Runner.
Yeah,
And it's a great performance, but it's also a great presence performance where he didn't need to be as good as he is in that movie because he inhabited and looked perfect for it. And really the same with Lady Hawk. It doesn't need to be a great performance, but he was almost always better than the things he was in required him to be because he could just get away with looking like Rutger Hauer and having that screen presence.
Yeah. Yeah, he was something, man, and I was always thrilled to see him in, in the latter days. Like I loved him in Confessions of why am I blanking on the name of the Chuck Barris movie?
Dangerous Mind.
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. It was just when he popped up in that, I was like, oh man, it was just like a treat to see him.
It seemed like he was due for someone to decide that he was ready for a real resurgence. And I mean, something like Hobo with a Shotgun was a resurgence of a particular kind, but it felt like he was due for a Quentin Tarantino to build a movie around him where you went, oh my God, he's actually fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, give him an Oscar nomination, and it just didn't happen for whatever reason.
Yeah, but there's plenty of stuff to go around. I mean, I like the Blind Swordsman movie that he made. I thought that was fun. He made a great bounty hunter movie called Wanted Dead or Alive with Gary Sherman, who's a director we've been talking about, Tom, for like three mornings straight. Gary Sherman directed that movie. So, yeah, but he's going to be missed. Amazing guy.
Just iconic, and so many of those movies remain iconic, so they'll continue to be.
Yes. Okay, let's get back to the TCA. HBO panel is what we were talking about. What else happened?
Let's see. We also had a panel for HBO's new adaptation of His Dark Materials, the Philip Pullman literary trilogy that was not particularly successfully adapted as The Golden Compass for the big screen and was supposed to be a potential trilogy franchise there, and for very logical reasons was not. But it's extremely well cast. And so today on the panel we had Ruth Wilson, who plays the Eva Green character. We had James McAvoy via satellite. We had Lin-Manuel Miranda, who has done other things recently.
Yeah, Roy Scheider. He's Roy Scheider.
Exactly. Basically, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who people will know best as Roy Scheider from Fosse's version. Yes, was there. He's also in it. And Daphne Keene, who, of course, was in Logan and was so very good and vivid in that.
So is, great. So great. Yeah, she's so great.
And I'm not sure I'd realized that she was actually little and British, as opposed to, because she's Spanish-British, but because of the language in that movie, I took her largely as being Spanish. But
yeah.
She's also little and British.
Oh, okay. So,
a little bit funny. Anyway, so we've only seen one episode of that, and if nothing else, it definitely feels like it gets to go in significantly more detail than the movie did, because the movie was simply utter and complete nonsense, and the series, at least thus far, appears to maybe be going into enough depth to be not nonsense, but we'll see. Then of some interest, I suspect, to you is The Righteous Gemstones.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that is the new Danny McBride series with executive producers Jody Hill and David Gordon Green, and with a really good cast, including Danny McBride and John Goodman and Adam Devine and a few other very recognizable people. Walton Goggins has a prominent role, and it was a pretty interesting panel. It's a lot like Succession, only in the world of evangelists.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that, and they're actually pairing it with Succession, so it makes some sense. And it's interesting, and I think that Danny McBride is probably smarter and more sensitive as a artist than a lot of his roles would give one the impression that he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting hearing him talk about that project, and then also a Black Lady sketch show, which is created by Robin Thede, who we, of course, love from The Rundown, and this is her first new show since then, and it is a as it suggests, a sketch show starring four African-American women, and it's very, very funny. It premieres on August 2nd, and I am very happy to see her getting this spotlight for herself, because she's fantastic and deserves it.
She's great. I was looking at some of your some of the tweets, and you replied to a tweet that someone, it was a year ago that they canceled The Rundown, which is just ridiculous that they did that.
It remains a genuinely baffling thing to me, and I don't understand what it was that BET thought that they were doing. I don't understand how BET had a show of that potential cornerstone value, and they gave it no opportunity to grow.
Yeah.
And that's on them, and I will always hold that as a dark mark against BET. Hopefully they will find other ways to gain respect in the future so that I can grumpily mention, gee, wouldn't it be nice if they still had The Rundown with Robin Thede in late night?
Yeah, I agree with that. Does that wrap up HBO?
Basically, we also had an executive session with HBO president Casey Bloys, who talked about the usual deduction and covered around various different controversies, real and otherwise, emphasized that really they were not particularly stressed out by whether or not a few groups of vocal people didn't love the Game of Thrones finale. It's not going to make any difference in his life, which is accurate, and he noted 32 Emmy nominations, so what's he going to do?
Right.
whatever. And he also ducked around various bits of unsettled scuttlebutt regarding Andrea Arnold's direction on Big Little Lies and whether the show was legitimately removed from her control in its second season, or if she never truly had control at all, because television is not a auteur director's medium, et cetera, et cetera. There were a lot of speculative articles in the past couple of weeks talking about how the show was taken from her control. He wanted to emphasize it was close to business as usual, and nothing was taken from her control. So whether or not one believes that, I'm not honestly sure.
Okay. Nothing. I mean, obviously, there was nothing about Barry or any of the other shows that are on there. They were just like pumping the new stuff, correct?
But largely pumping the new stuff. Certainly, someone could have mentioned Barry, but it's one of those things where, you know, already renewed, wildly successful, lots of Emmy nominations. So the only things to say about it are, yay, we're happy with Barry. And so no one asked him to say that he was happy with Barry.
Did anybody yell at him about canceling Crashing?
No, no, that did not come up at all. See, this is why you need to become a member of the ETCA, Nick, so that you could remember that crashing was the thing that happened the last year. No, it didn't come up. I'm trying to think of other things. You know, he talked about how gratifying it was to have gotten to finally make that Deadwood movie, because it's been the thing that he and every person in his job for the better part of a decade has had to answer questions about at press tour at this exact event.
Yeah.
You know, at this time of year, every year, is what's happening with the Deadwood movie. And for a lot of years, it was, oh, when Dave Milch is ready to make it, it'll totally happen. We don't know. And then finally, like a year and a half ago, it was, it's actually coming for real. And we were all like, okay, sure, whatever. And so all he could do this time is go, yep, it happened. We're happy.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, in a week from Friday, I will be at a convention that I go to every year that I'm a host of. It's the Flashback Horror Convention. And last year, Brad Dourif was there because we had a Child's Play reunion. And so Brad Dourif was there, and he had the crazy facial hair, and his daughter was there too, because she's in, like, one of the Chucky, Bride of Chucky or Son of Chucky or whatever the hell it is. And so she's like, and she hadn't, I guess she hadn't seen him. They met each other, you know, like in the lobby, and I was standing next to him, and she's like, why don't you shave that? You look ridiculous, she said to her father, to Brad. And he's like, I can't. And he couldn't because he was shooting Deadwood, which made me happy. So.
And now you've seen it and know that you're happy.
And it was great, yeah. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
There you go. Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can read his stuff at on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Much more to talk about right after we break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Every 2 weeks, we talk with our good friend Dan Feinberg, who actually talked with us last week because of the Emmy nominations. We appreciate that. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he is in a swanky Beverly Hills hotel right now. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much. 3 weeks in a row, Nick.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Good time.
How about that? what are you looking forward to at TCA?
I am definitely looking forward to the awards in 2 weeks. That will be August 3rd. I'm looking forward to seeing what Desus and Mero have to do as hosts. And also, that night's show will mark the end of my TCA presidential tenure. So I am looking forward to that. And then there's a bunch of stuff here and there that I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to today, the AMC is paneling stuff, so they're doing a Lodge 49 panel. You still need to watch Lodge 49.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. No, I know I do. I've heard it from David Pasquazi, too, so I know.
Well, he's not exactly impartial. I'm largely impartial.
So, right.
But also a fan and really strongly recommend it because I think you would dig the heck out of it. There's a bunch of fun stuff coming up in the next few days. There's the strange HGTV renovating the Brady Bunch house show, and we've got a lot of the various surviving Bradys on a panel. That should be strange or fun.
I read something about it. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. This is just going to be so weird.
It is. It might be, again, you know, I don't expect it's going to be wildly, strongly pedigreed television. But on the other hand, we do have a panel that has Barry Williams, Maureen McCormick, Christopher Knight, Eve Plum, and Mike Lookingland, and Susan Olsen. So that's about as many surviving Bradys as you can put on a panel. So, you know, that should be good. And then we've got a bunch of Hulu stuff that could be fun and interesting. We've got a bunch of Amazon stuff, also always entertaining. And then eventually we can get to broadcast networks. They still make television as
well. Oh, they do?
So
okay.
I swear to you. Some of it might even be good.
Uh-huh.
Mostly just The Good Place.
I feel guilty that I did not watch last night's Big Brother. I took a nap. I'm going to watch it in the morning. So I can't give you a full update. on these idiots who are in the house. But it did get kind of fun, actually. I got to say, the last couple episodes have been kind of fun because Cliff, the old guy, has stepped up and become very entertaining to watch on the show.
Look, when I stopped watching was when people were overhearing his strange ramblings in the diary room.
Yeah.
So, look, I would be vaguely amused if the old guy actually won a season, but...
What
you're getting is just straight up Stockholm syndrome.
No, I understand. I totally understand. But I will say this: you wouldn't know it. The guy's a beast in competitions. He's a beast.
I would definitely not expect that.
Yeah. No, that's why it's just been. And he's and he put up the two shirtless, the biggest idiotic bros. He put them up. I don't know what happened, but he won head of household last week, and he put up the two. He put up Aquaman and the other idiot. And so that was a fun thing to see. So yeah, they're still pretty much all morons. And you're probably better off for not watching it. I just have no life.
I am definitely not worse off. I'm 100% sure of that.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I'm very sad. I have not started to watch this yet. And I was sad to see your review because I happen to be a massive fan of Veronica Mars. I gave money to the Kickstarter for the movie. That's how much I like Veronica Mars, and I love Kristen Bell, and I was very disappointed to see your review, so it's not very good, huh?
My review is on the more negative side. It's as simple as that of the critical responses. So let's be honest, it's possible that other people are definitely more enthusiastic. I think that there is some built in, again, a little bit like you with this Big Brother season, amount of Stockholm syndrome to it. It's that, you've been through the wars with Veronica Mars. You watched the first season, which was fantastic. You watched the second season, which was a mixed bag, but if you stop and kind of get some distance, it was actually really, really good. It was a well-crafted mystery. You watched the third season, which for the most part was a big old mess.
Yeah.
But I was always actually partial to the way it ended, but whatever. You paid money to the Kickstarter. You watched the movie, which I think is barely even rises to the level of a movie. I mean, to me, that movie really is a Kickstarter presence. It, if that Kickstarter was just a weird pyramid scheme, then the movie was the strange bonus feature that you got for kicking in the money. It wasn't a movie.
Okay,
it was,
right.
Like on a cinematic level, that does not rise to the level of movie. But if you've gone through all those things with the show and you come away and you're still at the point where you have unironic, total, complete, no trepidation excitement for a season on Hulu, chances are good that you're really invested enough that it's just not going to matter.
Right.
And that you're so happy to have these characters back that you're just like, okay, yay. And they sound pretty much like themselves, and it looks pretty much like Veronica Mars, unlike the movie. It really does feel like a season of television.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely, totally a legitimate production. It is not a tax fraud shelter or anything, which I'm pretty sure the movie really was. Don't want to make criminal accusations. That is woefully unprofessional. And yes, I assume no one was actually breaking the law in the Veronica Mars movie. It was just not very good. I think a lot of people are so invested in seeing through the inconsistency and seeing what they love in it that they love it. And to me, I thought it was a very uninvolving 8-episode mystery. Never for a second was I invested in the actual mystery of the season, which involves a serial bomber. That's all I will spoil there. Mm-hmm. So that never mattered. I have never been a fan of Veronica and Logan as a couple.
Uh-huh.
The show is way more invested in those two than I am. And the season is heavily invested in those two as a couple. So if you are invested in them as a couple, you're on board for that. And there's a lot of popping up of familiar faces. And I think if you don't care whether or not they're well used and you're just happy to see Percy Daggs III and go, hey, Wallace, awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, a dozen other people like that, then that's great. I just would have loved for someone to have figured out a good way to use any of those people I like so much, and I just don't feel like it did.
Yeah, okay. One of the hooks that people are talking about is that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is on the writing staff and wrote some episodes. A lot of people, maybe people don't realize this, but he is a best-selling mystery author and has written Sherlock Holmes stories as well.
He is also a award-winning columnist for The Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah.
He is my colleague, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah.
Even though whenever there are award shows at which we're both nominated for things, he always wins, because who's going to vote against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Right.
Certainly not me if I had a vote, but also he tends to sit at the tables for the bigger and more important people, and certainly he is both literally and figuratively about as big as it gets.
Right.
I mean, he's freaking Kareem. There's no getting past that. But yes, he is a producer on the show and part of the writing staff, and have fun for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Really quickly before we break here, but so I'm a little trepidatious now because of what you said about Veronica Mars, but of course I'm still going to watch it. But before we break here, it's on my DVR at home. Have you seen South Side yet? Which of course is actually takes place here in Chicago on the South Side.
I have not, but my colleague Robin Barr, who's one of our great freelancers at the Hollywood Reporter, gave an extremely enthusiastic review.
Great.
Whichever week it premiered, or whatever week we had it in the magazine, I think I had to do the Veronica Mars review, and so you know, there was only time to do one, and so she got Southside, but she really enjoyed it, and
great.
So I would like to see it. Diallo Riddle, who co-created it, is extremely talented.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's on my DVR at home waiting for me. So, all right, Dan, hang out, okay?
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right. Let's take a break. More TV talk coming up. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Every couple of weeks, we talk with our good friend Dan Feinberg, who is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. More TV to talk about, and here is Dan. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Hey, I see you reviewed Who Killed Garrett Phillips from HBO. Talk about that one.
I did. HBO, who has always done, as a network, spectacular work with documentaries. Really, the HBO Monday Documentary Showcase has been one of my favorite things on television, but lately, HBO has been doing something shocking, and they've been airing actual scripted programs on Monday night. So they aired Gentleman Jack, they aired Chernobyl, obviously, which was wildly acclaimed and was really terrific. So that means they've been expanding documentaries into other nights, and one of the things they've been doing the past few weeks is doing a slightly different approach where they've been doing two-night crime documentaries, so kind of things that maybe with tighter editing could have just been a one long documentary, but extended. But yeah, they did I Love You Now Die a couple weeks ago, which is really good. If people haven't checked it out, it is a story of a online romance gone just about as horribly wrong as such a thing could go. And it's one of those things where you feel three or four different ways as it goes along, and you're confident at one point, you know, one of the people is horribly guilty and awful things need to happen, and then your opinion changes, et cetera. And Who Killed Garrett Phillips is the most recent one. It's from director Liz Garbus, who directed the Oscar-nominated Nina Simone documentary a couple of years ago. She's directed a handful of very solid HBO docs, and it's about a murder of a 12-year-old boy in upstate New York in, I believe, 2011. And over two nights, it just basically tears your brain apart as you look at the judicial system and you look at at how unfair it can be, and you look at sort of where the line is between malevolence and straight up negligence and just ineptitude, and where sometimes in such situations innocent people can have their lives ruined, et cetera, et cetera. It's frustrating. It's infuriating. It's an interesting portrait of a community. It's really good. And all three of the two-night HBO crime docs have been very solid. And I like the approach of saying, okay, some things are good as 90-minute documentaries. Some things are designed to be six-hour or eight-hour series. You know, the Jinx, to me, is one of the great things that HBO has ever done. It is a remarkable series.
Yeah.
And then some things are, you know, two nights. And so I Love You Now, Die was really close to the kind of thing that could have just been re-edited as a two-hour and 15-minute feature doc, and it would have been just fine. Whereas Who Killed Garrett Phillips, both of the segments are verging on feature length themselves. So it's, you know, could just as easily be a four-night doc. You know, it's how it's showing that you can tell stories lots of different ways, and there's no one-size-fits-all rule when it comes to TV crime documentaries. So I like it when people want to experiment with format.
That's it's Who Killed Garrett Phillips on HBO. Okay. Another review that you did was for Pandora on the CW.
The CW just likes to fill space in the summer, and they don't necessarily really care if it's utterly, hilariously, comically inept. And
okay.
and they just don't care, and that's because they want to keep the lights on, and you want to keep the lights on so that you can basically promote things going forward. You need a promotional platform, and if all you do is show repeats, especially on a network like CW, where their target audience isn't aware of the concept of a repeat at all, you know, they're just like, seriously, I'm just going to go watch a full season of Riverdale on Netflix. Doing original programming boosts their ratings exactly enough to have value. Last year, they premiered The Outpost, which looked like it was shot in someone's backyard with a green blanket to do green screen work. And Pandora is a step better than that. It's kind of like Starfleet Academy, that kind of premise. A young girl's parents die, and she enrolls in the Space Fleet Academy, and I have no idea what its purpose is. It's borderline inept on every level, but it's better than the first season of The Outpost. And, the CW has another one of these sort of strange quickie knockoff shows premiering this weekend called Bulletproof, which is actually, compared to the other two, entirely professionally made. It's a British police drama trying to be an American police drama about, you know, two partners in the London police department who get embroiled in different whatever, and they sort of banter like American cops do, and there are high-speed car chases and explosions and stuff, and it's significantly better. I don't think it's necessarily in any way good, but it's absolutely professionally made on every level, so it's a step up by the standards of CW summer programming lately.
So what does the CW have? What are their successes now?
Well, their successes are all of the various DC shows. And so, you know, by their various degrees of success, Arrow, which will be ending this year, is a, you know, clear big success. But The Flash has been a big success. Supergirl, which moved over from CBS, is a success. And then Riverdale is massive in a variety of ways that aren't always measurable in terms of linear ratings, but it's a huge international format. It's a massive success on Netflix, and all of the CW shows are, which is interesting because they're almost all going to move over to HBO Max when HBO Max becomes Warner Brothers' new streaming platform.
Oh, right.
So that's going to be a big blow to Netflix. And you know, a big boon for a new streaming service. But yeah, they have reasonable successes of varying kinds, and Then, of course, they've got a few more episodes remaining of Jane the Virgin, which has been a very good show for a long time. They had Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which was very good and ended this year. So I generally respect a lot what the CW does. It just happens that they've taken the approach of filling the summer with the very oddest of filler that I don't even know where they find things like Pandora, because it's of a level that's so low that like Sci-Fi Network wouldn't air it. They would have no way of promoting that show because it's so not real.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's you know, again, it's a strategy, and they seem happy with it.
Okay, all right. So, you know, Tom and I, my producer and I, were talking about how weird it is that they're actually making a series out of Snowpiercer, which is a movie that I absolutely adore. And when I saw that they were making a series out of it, I was a real head scratcher. I was like, huh? Have you seen it?
I have not, because it continues to get kicked down the road. And there was an original pilot. There was a pilot that got redeveloped and reshot. It has been on the shelf for now a reasonable amount of time, getting special effects work done. It's not like it's just sitting there gathering dust. They're trying to, you know, get everything right, and it's clearly going to be effects heavy. I've seen at this point trailers, and that's it. And it was originally made for TNT, and that seemed like a reasonable place for it. It got moved to TBS, where TBS has spent years attempting to hone a comedy brand. This has nothing to do with it. As I said on Twitter today, the thing I like best about the movie is that it really is a dark comedy. It's a social satire.
Yeah.
And there's no indication in the trailer that they have any awareness that that's what the movie is at its heart, that there is no indication of humor in the trailers. And that could just be that they're marketing it as thriller forward. I feel as if probably the movie was marketed in the same way. And the movie also was not a movie anyone ever knew how to promote or anything.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to see.
Yeah.
But no, all I have seen so far is trailers. But, you know, it has Jennifer Connelly in it, and I would like to be happy to see Jennifer Connelly on my TV. It has David Diggs, who is incredibly charismatic and talented, and could be a good leading man for a TV show. So we'll see. But
yeah.
It has been such a circuitous route. So
yeah, I was like, huh? I was, because, you know, I mean, it's not like Snowpiercer busted down the box office. You know what I mean? Yeah, and so it just seemed like strange. And also, you know, it's for me, you can't do a Snowpiercer thing and not have Tilda Swinton. That's it, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and she is kind of, you know, the fulcrum of a lot of the humor in
yeah,
the movie.
Absolutely.
And so it is. It's hard to tell from the trailer. I don't think that that's the role that Jennifer Connelly's playing, or maybe it is, or maybe that, you know, I can't really tell if there's going to be an equivalent character
right.
who will be similarly, utterly out of this world, insanely brilliantly
yeah.
funny, but also other things. So,
right. Okay.
I hope so.
All right. Well, listen, enjoy the rest of the TCA. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and that'll be right before the awards, right? No. It'll be after the awards.
It will be after the awards, so I will have the burden of presidency off of me, but I will be able to update you on the awards and all of the other TCA press tour fun.
Great. All right, Dan, always a pleasure. Have fun, man. Take care.
Talk to you later, Nick.
All right, buddy. Bye. There you go. Dan Feinberg, always a pleasure to talk to that guy. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. All right, let's take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio in downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Triple Play Thursday. You made Triple Play Thursday. There you go. Who requested the Beatles?
That's coming to us from Sam.
Sam. All right. We'll get a Triple Play Thursday request for the Beatles. All right. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. As you have probably heard, the terrific actor Rutger Hauer has passed away. He was 75, one of my favorites, and had so many really memorable performances and so many really cool movies. And we're going to bust out a list here of 14 of the best movies that you can see Rutger Hauer in. We want to hear what you guys think. What are some of your favorite Rutger Hauer performances or your favorite Rutger Hauer movies or memories? He was just amazing. Passed away at 75. So our phone number is 312-981-7200. Rutger Hauer, the versatile Dutch leading man of the 70s who went on to star in the 1982 Blade Runner as Roy Batty, died July 19 at his home in the Netherlands after a short illness. He was 75. Hauer's agent, Steve Kennis, confirmed the news and said that Hauer's funeral was held on Wednesday. His most cherished performance came in a film that was a resounding flop on its original release. In 1982, he portrayed the murderous yet soulful Roy Batty, leader of a gang of outlaw replicants opposite Harrison Ford and Ridley Scott's sci-fi noir opus Blade Runner. The picture became a widely influential cult favorite, and Batty proved to be Hauer's most memorable role. And again, you know, we've talked about this before, Tom, that movie tanked when it came out. Blade Runner absolutely tanked when it came out. And I know that now it's considered, you know, a cult classic and people love it. It's become a sci-fi, you know, staple. But man, and it really got a lot of attention because, you know, it followed for Harrison Ford. It followed on the heels of Empire and Raiders. And so then Blade Runner came out the following summer and nobody went to see it. And it was just considered this massive waste of money. Like Warner Brothers spent a ton of money on it. And they did. You can look at it now. The special effects, by the way, still hold up.
Oh, they're incredible.
In Blade Runner. Douglas Trumbull, who was one of the greatest special effects artists of all time. But when that movie came out, it really, really tanked. A lot of people thought it was too dark. They didn't quite get it. But then as years have gone by, obviously, people have, you know, there are cults that are attached to Blade Runner. And particularly Rutger Hauer's Roy Batty.
I just always feel bad because then they tried it again 30 years later thinking, okay, everybody's on Blade Runner. We're good. Still kind of tanks.
Oh, it tanked.
Yeah, still tanks.
Blade Runner 2049 tanked, but you know what? It's a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it. I thought Blade Runner 2049 was fantastic. And I thought it really captured the spirit of the original. It was really long, you know, and I don't know. I think they may have released it at the wrong time. I don't know. Because if you remember correctly, it was a summer release, wasn't it? Didn't it come out in the summer?
Yeah, I want to say it was
like an August release or something?
No, earlier than that. Or maybe it was. Oh, God, my memory is so terrible of when it came out. I just remember working in the theater when it came out.
Yeah.
And it was the bane of our existence. Because if one person came to see it, we were staying until at least 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, because it was 2 hours and 40-something minutes. I mean, that was a hefty running time there. But Blade, the original Blade Runner, man, I loved it from the very first time I saw it. I just lost my mind when I saw Blade Runner. I saw it a bunch of times in the theater. And as I mentioned, the summer of 1982 was pretty good because playing in any theater, like if you go to like a multiplex, you could go see John Carpenter's The Thing or perhaps Blade Runner. Or maybe if you want to walk a couple of feet to another theater, you can see The Road Warrior. They're all playing like at the same time.
Next level.
And of course, you know, there's E.T. for the people who like, you know, E.T. That was out too. And that was the one that was dominating. Obviously, that's the one that dominated the summer. And one of the reasons why both Blade Runner and The Thing failed so miserably at the box office because everybody in the world of sci-fi, it was all about E.T. So if you released a sci-fi movie, you know, in the summer of E.T., it's not going to do very well, and which is really unfortunate. But yeah, Roy Batty, and again, as I mentioned before, I find it really eerie and strange that Rutger Hauer has died in 2019. The year that Blade Runner takes place, and the year that Roy Batty his character passes away, his character, well, his replicant dies. It's just very strange. It's just very strange that's the case. So we're talking Rutger Hauer. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. He was 75 years old. We got a lot more movies to talk about and a lot more of his career to talk about, too. But if you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Here's Ike. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
Good.
Yeah, this has been beating me up all day. I've always loved Rutger Hauer. He's one of my favorite actors. So I decided to share with you my personal trilogy of movies that I liked them. And of course, the first one was The Hitcher.
Yep.
He nailed it in that role. He scared the crap out of me. He was perfect for that role.
Yep.
Yeah, the second one is this is a very underrated action movie because he was so badass in this movie, Wanted Dead or Alive.
Yeah, Wanted Dead or Alive is again our friend Gary Sherman, who climbed up on one of the antennae of of the Hancock Building, directed that movie and actually posted on Facebook a really beautiful tribute to Rutger Hauer and about how great it was to work with him. Yeah, Wanted Dead or Alive, terrific movie, great movie.
Yeah, of course it has one of the best bad guy come up of all time when he stuffed the grenade in the mouth of Gene Simmons and blew him up. Oh, that was so badass.
That's how the movie ended. He stuffed a grenade in Gene Simmons' mouth. How many of us would like to stuff a grenade in Gene Simmons' mouth? Raise your hand. My hand is up now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, the third one, last one, this is very underrated because they were planning to do a franchise with this film, and I was hoping they'd do it, but I don't think they'll do it now since he's gone. Blind Fury.
Yeah, Blind Fury is another one of those that was kind of under the... He made a lot of like really terrific genre movies that we're going to get to. We're going to talk about that. A lot of them flew under the radar. Blind Fury is a terrific...
That fight with Sokazuki, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Ike.
No problem.
All right, take care. 312-981-7200.
I really love Blind Fury because it's, while it stands on its own, it's also a remake of one of the Zatoichi movies, and a great remake at that. They actually captured the best parts of that franchise.
One of my very favorite Rutger Hauer movies is one that nobody has seen. It's called The Blood of Heroes, and it is a great movie. We'll get to that one a little bit later on. But, you know, again, as we go through some of these essential movies that you should see if you like Rutger Hauer, you're going to see a lot of these flew under the radar. He should have been a much bigger star than he was. I mean, he was a big star. People knew who he was. He made an impact in film, no question about it. And he was one of the most memorable and screen-worthy actors around. But he just didn't have the crossover success, the huge, huge success that he should have had. More recently, he appeared in a pair of 2005 films as Cardinal Rourke in Sin City. And as the corporate villain who Bruce Wayne discovers is running the Wayne Corporation in Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins. I had forgotten that he was in Batman Begins. I totally forgot. Well, because I totally forgot I even saw that movie. But but I loved him in Sin City, and I thought it was really cool that Rodriguez cast him. Mm-hmm. If there's something, I'm not a big, as you know, I'm not a Rodriguez fan at all. But I he has the same sort of like eye that Tarantino has for casting. Like, he'll cast cool people.
Yeah,
and Sin City was loaded with cool people.
He's at Rutger's in it. Powers Booth is in it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Mickey Rourke was just amazing in it.
Carla Gugino,
oh, please,
is a smoke show.
Oh my God,
a straight up dime.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we got a break here, but we're going to talk more about his career. Rutger Hauer passed away. And we'll hear some audio from some of his performances as well, as we remember the great Rutger Hauer and talk about, we've got 14 movies here. These are 14 essential movies that you should see with Rutger Hauer. Some of them people probably haven't seen, including The Blood of Heroes, which is a really, really great film. So let's take a break. The news is coming up right after this.
I look at the world and I know.
Such a jam. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and that is Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, baby, Triple Play Thursday! Beatles, second song of the Triple Play for this morning. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. In a little while, we're going to talk about some of the most unhealthy fast food burgers that you can eat. So we're going to give you a guide on how you can either avoid them or go, yeah, I think I'll try that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And right now, though, we're talking about Rutger Hauer, a great actor who just passed away a few days ago. He was 75 years old, so memorable in so many movies. Obviously, Blade Runner is the first one that really pops up. That's probably the most iconic role that he's had. But, yeah, we've got some other stuff that he appeared in. In True Blood, he played Niall Brigit, the king of the tribe from which the Stackhouse family is descended. He was also in ABC's medieval musical comedy Gallivant as Kingsley in 2015. He was a natural at horror and vampire roles, starring as Van Helsing and Dario Argento's unfortunate Dracula 3D. he was the vampire Barlow in the 2004 miniseries adaptation of Stephen King's Salem's Lot. Rob Lowe, Andre Brower, and Donald Sutherland appeared in that. You know, I've only seen it that one time. I remember liking it. I remember liking it, and I also like the TV version of it from the 70s.
I forgot who directed that.
Toby Hooper.
It was Toby Hooper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Handsome, energetic, and fluent in several languages, Hauer made his first mark in the late 60s in the Netherlands as a star of Paul Verhoeven's medieval TV series, Floris. He vaulted to the top ranks of Dutch stardom. He starred in Turkish Delight, which is such a great movie. Such a great movie. The stuff that he did with Verhoeven, you know, the Danish stuff that he did with Verhoeven is really, really great, like, and worth going back to, you know, to check out. After three more Dutch features with Verhoeven became art house successes, he played a flashy role as a terrorist in the 1981 Sylvester Stallone thriller Nighthawks. You know, like stuff like Turkish Delight, Soldier of Orange, Spetters. These are all like this is the stuff that he did with Verhoeven. But that I discovered after Nighthawks, because Nighthawks was the first movie I ever saw Rutger Hauer. And I think in America, obviously, it was his American film debut. But I loved him so much that I looked up his career and I was like, oh. And then I went back and I saw Spetters and I saw Soldier of Orange and Turkish Delight and discovered what a terrific, you know, actor he is. Hauer increasingly turned to action-oriented parts in the 80s. He top-lined the big-budget fantasy Lady Hawk. He reteamed with Hollywood transplant Verhoeven in the Sword and Armor epic Flesh and Blood, which is a really great movie, if you've not seen it. Jennifer Jason Leigh. He started as a psychotic killer in The Hitcher, took Steve McQueen's shotgun-toting bounty hunter role in a modern reboot of the TV Western Wanted, Dead or Alive. His major artistic triumph came in the Italian production of The Legend of the Holy Drinker. His sensitive turn as a homeless, drunk, and petty criminal who finds redemption in Paris carried the feature, which collected the Golden Lion at the Venice Film Festival. During the 90s, he gravitated toward some more routine roles in American and international productions, including he's in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and he's fantastic in it. He debuted in the small screen as a Nazi officer in Inside the Third Reich. He was in Fatherland and... He did so many other great things, but Hauer made his most immediate and intense impression as Batty in the sophomore American feature Blade Runner, which is the adaptation of Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? He wrote his own dialogue for the film's climactic face-off with adversary Harrison Ford. Though the film swiftly fell off screens, it remains a genre landmark today in no small measure because of Hauer's electrifying performance. So his performance... in Blade Runner is really, really special. He brings a humanity to the role. He's also really scary, and he looks cool. And there are so many wonderful moments in that he has in Blade Runner. But obviously, when was the first time you saw Blade Runner?
That's a tough one. It had to be back in at least 07, 08 when the final cut came out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, my folks introduced me to a lot of movies, but not the kind of stuff that I would eventually define my taste with.
Yeah.
And there was just all this talk about the final cut, this is it, this is the real version of Blade Runner. And so I was just like, well, what the hell is Blade Runner? Oh wow, Han Solo's in it, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So I ended up watching it. And
now you watched the final cut.
Yeah.
Okay. And now, have you seen the other cuts?
I've seen the original theatrical cut, and it's one of those things where it's hard to go back. I know that you love every version of it.
Every version.
But I cannot for the life of me get past the horrific narration that they forced Harrison Ford to do.
And he purposely gave bad line readings.
Exactly.
Because he hated it so much.
And he was right to be like, this is BS.
Yeah.
Because it's terrible. They were really trying to shoehorn, you know, more conventional things into this movie that just needed to be left as is. But I love the final cut. I've always been interested in seeing you've mentioned a cut before that's significantly more violent.
Yes.
And I've always wanted to see it. Not that it would really change. I can't imagine how it would change how I feel about it, but it'd be interesting to see.
It is significantly more violent. And, you know, the scene where he sticks his thumbs into Tyrell's.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you get a full on close up of the thumbs going into the eyes. It's that kind of thing.
I need more life.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, and they also, you know, in the theatrical cut with the voiceover, not in the reason why I like it's obviously not the preferable version.
Sure.
But the reason why I like it's because of the one I grew up on.
Right.
You know, I was 17 when that movie, 16 when that movie came out, and going on 17. And I saw it in the theater, but had no idea. Nobody had any idea that there was another cut or director's cut that Ridley Scott wanted. That was Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. That was the one I had on VHS that I wore out, you know, tape.
That's how it was for decades.
And so it wasn't until years later, 1993, in fact, was when they were like, hey, look at this. And then in 2007 was the final version of it. So I love all of them. Obviously, the best version is the 2007 version. There's no question about it. But I still have a soft spot in my heart for the one I grew up on.
Of course.
But like that line that you're talking about, I want more life, in the theatrical cut, he says, I want more life effer. In the director's cut and the final cut, he says, father, which is a significant change. You know, in the implication of that line. And I don't know if they made Ridley Scott change that or what, but I don't know. There's just a lot more going on in that movie, you know, when it's away from what Warner Brothers wanted, with Warner Brothers wanted to give the notes. Like the ending, the ending is ridiculous, and with using outtakes from The Shining at the end of the movie. I mean, that's just absurd.
No, it's one of those things where it just shows most people this is what happens when studios get overly involved.
Right.
And they won't just let a person do what they want to do. And I'm not trying to exonerate Ridley Scott as beyond reproach. He's done plenty of things
dumb. He's only made two really good movies. Thelma and Louise.
I always say four. Alien, Blade Runner, Thelma and Louise, and then Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut.
I can't go.
You can't abide by that.
Yeah. I mean, there are two things about Thelma and Louise that keep it from being a great movie. I don't like the ending. It's fine that they died, but I don't like that it's all happy and that they show. Because the original cut, Ridley Scott cut to black. Like, they went off that cliff. Boom. They're dead. That's it. You don't have a happy song and all the old clips. Hey, look at the pictures and the clips. We're still kind of alive. Don't like that. And there's no way, and I've said this before, there's no way. I do not care how hot Brad Pitt is, that Gina Davis's character, who was sexually assaulted like 6 hours early, would watch her friend kill the guy that was assaulting her, jump into bed with this guy. I know they had to do it. It had to happen because the money had to be stolen. It's a road movie. Mm-hmm. The money has to go. That's part of the road. That's part of the road movie tropes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So hot guy has sex with her, takes the money. They don't have money. That, you know, I understand road movies. I've seen them before, but it bothered me so much that this woman who was sexually assaulted like 5 hours earlier suddenly just jumps into bed with a guy that she just met. Doesn't know. I don't know. That bothered me. But his two masterpieces, as far as I'm concerned, are Blade Runner and Alien. I mean, those
Yeah, totally.
So as far as Blade Runner goes, all of the performances in that movie are, if you go back and look at every single performance in that movie, like Daryl Hannah is amazing in it. Obviously, Harrison Ford's great in it. Edward James Olmos is mysterious and weird and awesome in it. The standout performance in the movie is Rutger Hauer. And the standout character in that movie is Roy Batty. And at the very end of the movie, you know, we all know the speech that he gives at the end. He brought that to set. He wrote it. Nobody knew he was going to do it. He did it. And the entire crew broke down crying after they had shot the scene. They called cut. That's the take that's in the movie. And it was the first time. Nobody knew it. Ridley Scott didn't know he was going to do it. Ridley Scott did not know that he kind of rewrote it and reworded it. He added the tears in the rain. That's all Rutger Hauer. And so we have to hear this. I mean, obviously, this is, you know, everybody posted this on their Facebook page, you know, this monologue, the fact that he wrote it and brought so much to it and brought everybody, including Harrison Ford, to tears. So this is one of the most memorable things that Rutger Hauer has ever done on film, and this is from Blade Runner.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears.
Unbelievable. I'm getting choked up.
it's remarkable.
Man. So, Rutger Hauer, he was active in social causes. He was an outspoken sponsor of the environmental organization Greenpeace. He was a founder of the Starfish Association, which was a nonprofit that was devoted to AIDS awareness. He is survived by his second wife of 50 years and his daughter from his marriage to Heidi Merz. So Rutger Hauer's passed away. We're going to take a break. We come back. We got more Rutger Hauer to talk about. We want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite Rutger Hauer performances or movies or memories or any of that stuff? We've got a lot of celebrities and people who have worked with him or fans of his tweeted out and talked a little bit about him and send out their condolences. And we also have 14 essential movies that you need to see to celebrate the work of the amazing Rutger Hauer. So we'll remember Rutger Hauer a little bit more right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Let it be. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That wraps up our triple play of the Beatles, but we got Triple Play Thursday. You made Triple Play Thursday! It's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. Coming up at 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran has your morning drive. Stay tuned for that. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So the great Rutger Hauer has passed away, just a really terrific actor, and we're going to tell you about 14 movies that you definitely have to see that he is just fantastic in. He worked with a lot of great people, and he had a lot of great fans in the entertainment industry, and they all came out and paid tribute to him. The passing of the famed Blade Runner actor Rutger Hauer has prompted an outpouring of tributes from filmmakers, actors, and fans on Twitter, honoring a career highlighted by one of the most famous monologues in science fiction history. Director Guillermo del Toro praised Hauer as an intense, deep, genuine, and magnetic actor that brought truth, power, and beauty to his films. Law & Order SVU star Ice-T reflected on the time he worked with Hauer on the action film Surviving the Game, while Kiss frontman Gene Simmons posted a picture of a VHS copy of Wanted Dead or Alive in which the rock star played a terrorist being hunted down by Hauer. But most quoted the famous Tears in the Rain speech, which we just heard, that Hauer uttered as replicant Roy Batty, one that was not part of Hampton Fancher's script and was improvised on set. Guillermo del Toro tweeted out, rest in peace, the great Rutger Hauer, an intense, deep, genuine, and magnetic actor that brought truth, power, and beauty to his films. My personal favorite, Flesh and Blood, Eureka. Oh, man, Eureka. Oh, such a great movie. Man. How did I forget about that one? Guillermo, thank you. The Hitcher, Blade Runner, Lady Hawk, and Blind Fury. Gene Simmons, who worked with him. Also said, sad to hear Rutger Hauer has passed away. He was always a gentleman, kind and compassionate, sending our condolences and prayers to his family, friends, and fans. Again, Ice-T, who worked with him in Surviving the Game, says, rest in peace, Rutger Hauer. I had the honor of working with him in Surviving the Game. He said that he wrote that for the Hollywood Reporter. The Hollywood Reporter broke the story that said the Dutch actor was famous for his speech in the Ridley Scott film, also memorable in Nighthawks, Batman Begins, and Sin City. Sebastian Bach.
Skid Row?
From Skid Row, the guy I knocked on his ass in a mosh pit. rest in peace, Rutger Hauer. You scared the blank out of me more than one time. Thank you for your great films. Someone wrote, just a reminder that Rutger Hauer added the Tears in the Rain line to his monologue in Blade Runner, which apparently brought the crew to tears. The death of Rutger Hauer is a particularly tough one because he had such a singular on-screen presence, wrote Birth Movies Death editor Scott Wampler. There was no one else quite like him, never was, and probably never will get another one. What a life that man had. It's true. Nobody was like him. He had a singular screen presence. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's an actor like no other. You know?
I think part of that, at least to me, was the fact that, he's Dutch.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he never really lost. He had that kind of almost androgynous accent that was unsettling yet magnetic at the same time.
Yeah.
It was very cool to listen to him talk.
It was, absolutely. Beyond Blade Runner, Hauer's fans reminisced on more of their favorite moments of his career. Some discussed the cult feature Split Second, in which Hauer plays a cop tasked with hunting down a killer monster in the tunnels of a flooded dystopian London. Others remembered him in The Hitcher, in which he played a psychopath serial killer who murders drivers who give him a ride. Stony Parker posts on Twitter, Rutger Hauer, a.k.a. The Hitcher, the character that made me not want to pick up hitchhikers ever again. Someone also, Toby the Beagle, one on Twitter, says, so sad that the legendary Rutger Hauer has passed away. Hobo with a Shotgun remains one of my primary guilty pleasures. I love that movie.
And the way it got made is so weird.
It's crazy.
So weird.
Yeah. Someone else, Jack Fennell, who is an author, says, rest in peace, Rutger Hauer, rather than the Tears in the Rain GIF. Here's the poster for the underrated 1992 cyberpunk horror mystery Split Second, in which the main character trudges through knee-deep water to fight a mutant sewer thing in a future London screwed by climate change. It's a great... Have you seen Split Second?
I have not, but that sounds like an absolute riot.
It's fantastic. While cinephiles have given most of the tribute, some gamers... Oh, yeah, he was pretty big into gaming, where he did voices.
Yeah, a lot of voice acting.
But gamers noted that his last role was recently released in video game of Kingdom Hearts 3 as the villainous Master Exnort, a role that he previously was played by Leonard Nimoy prior to his death in 2015. So a lot of the gamer people came out. It says, farewell, Rutger, too young, old friend, wrote screenwriter Eric Red. John Ryder in The Hitcher is the umbilical cord we'll always share. Everybody knew how bigger than life you were as a person, but I'll always remember your outrageous sense of humor and the laughs we had. Screenwriter Eric Red, who is a terrific guy and a great screenwriter. He wrote The Hitcher. He co-wrote Near Dark. He wrote and directed a terrific movie called Body Parts. And, oh, man, what was the werewolf movie he made? Oh, I feel like Bad Moon. Terrific werewolf movie. So the folks over at Bloody Disgusting, which is a fabulous website, bloody-disgusting.com, it's not all blood and disgusting. They do a great job covering the horror world, horror movies. And if you're a fan of that genre, you really should bookmark bloody-disgusting.com. It's great. Lots of incredibly talented writers, and they break a lot of news stories in terms of the horror genre. And not just horror, they do genre movies in general. So they are picking 14 of the greatest films from the late great Rutger Hauer that you must see. We're gonna get into that, and if you want to jump in, the one that I wanted to mention that I mentioned already before is the Blood of Heroes. Have you seen the Blood of Heroes?
I have not. No.
It's a really great movie, and it was well under the radar. It came out in 1989. Again, my friend Scott Oaken and I went to go see it, and we lost our minds. We were like, "This is the cool!" And it got a very small, release. It was only out for a couple of weeks in theaters, barely broke anything at the box office. But David Webb Peoples wrote and directed it, and he wrote Unforgiven, and he's one of the best screenwriters ever. And this is a really great, unique, wholly original sci-fi movie.
You know what? I have heard of this. Looking at this now, I have heard of this.
I think it went under. I also think it went under a different title. I also think that it was released.
Also released as The Salute of the Jugger.
Okay, yeah. So I saw it as Blood of Heroes.
Yeah.
So, but it's a terrific movie. I'll tell you all about it. It's also included in this list that Bloody Disgusting put together of the essential Rutger Hauer films that you should see. All right, more celebration of Rutger Hauer. We got a couple of more audio clips that we're going to play from his movies. And we'll do that right after we take a break for the news, which is next. Are you ready? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Who requested then that?
That's a little Utopia coming to us from Squat.
There you go. All right. Todd the Mod. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The great Rutger Hauer has passed away, and we're paying tribute to him now. I was just talking about how so many of his fans and his co-stars have sent out their condolences and their memories, and we were talking about his life and a lot of his performances and all that cool stuff. And bloody-disgusting.com put together an article where they grabbed 14 titles of the late, great Rutger Hauer that you should check out. And so we're going to go through those titles and talk about those movies. And we want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200 if you have any favorite Rutger Hauer performances or favorite Rutger Hauer memories. So one of the most memorable roles that he's ever played, I think second only to Roy Batty, would be John Ryder in The Hitcher, and which was needlessly remade. Oh, my God.
Sean Bean.
Oh, was it terrible. So The Hitcher was a movie that kind of came out of nowhere. Robert Harmon had only directed, I think, a couple of small films. Nobody knew who he was. Eric Red was the co-writer of, well, that was before Near Dark. So it was like nobody really knew who Eric Red was at that time. So it was a real groundbreaking movie. And C. Thomas Howell, obviously known for, you know, the teen idol stuff that he did and The Outsiders and all that stuff. But it's a very, and the great Jennifer Jason Leigh is in it. It's a very simple premise. Guy's driving a car, middle of the night, he's falling asleep. And in order to keep company, he sees a guy out on the road hitchhiking. He picks up this hitchhiker played by Rutger Hauer, who turns out to be an absolutely psychotic, lunatic, serial murderer. And the whole movie is about Rutger Hauer pursuing C. Thomas Howell, or vice versa, C. Thomas Howell pursuing Rutger Hauer before he kills more people. Jennifer Jason Leigh plays the waitress at a roadside diner who helps out C. Thomas Howell, and the result is a horrifying movie, really intense and really scary, and this wonderfully weird sort of relationship that happens between C. Thomas Howell's character and Rutger Hauer's character. There seems to be like this kind of weird attraction that the two have, and the movie plays with that level really disturbingly and quite brilliantly. It is a great film, a truly great movie that unfortunately was destroyed by Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert when it came out. They went out of their way to talk about how horrible the movie was and how disgusting it was and how offensive and morally reprehensible it was, of which it's not. And I'm convinced that they are a huge reason why that movie tanked at the box office. It, of course, has since gone on to be you know, huge. When the video came out, everybody's like, oh, why didn't we see this movie in the theater? It's a great movie. And not only is it just great, but the action scenes are fantastic. The car stunts are incredible. It's a great movie. But the core of the movie, the reason why the movie is as scary and as cool and as awesome as it is because of Rutger Hauer and his unbelievably creepy and awesome performance as John Ryder. So in the middle of the night, C. Thomas Howell pulls over, picks up this hitchhiker. He starts to feel a little uneasy about it. They start to have a little conversation. And then eventually, this is what happens after Rutger Hauer gets in the car with C. Thomas Howell. This is from The Hitcher.
What's so funny?
That's where the other guy's at.
Who's the other guy?
The guy who was driving that car back there. The guy who picked me up before you did.
Was that him in the car?
Yeah, sure it was. Could have walked very far.
Why is that?
Because I cut off his legs. And his arms. And his head. And I'm gonna do the same to you.
Terrifying.
I just love it. I love that movie so much, man.
I got chills.
It's fantastic. That's just the beginning. That's in the first 10 minutes of the movie, by the way.
Ain't that the crazy
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, that's the first 10 minutes of
it. He reveals himself so quickly.
Oh, my God. So, all right. So, Bloody Disgusting has put together some essential movies that you need to see to celebrate the great work of Rutger Hauer. And again, if you guys want to jump in here, your favorite Rutger Hauer movies, performances, all that stuff, talk and text right now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's what they say. It was with enormous sadness that we learned today that Rutger Hauer has passed away at the age of 75. The Dutch actor and philanthropist was a mainstay in Dutch film and television since the 70s before moving to American productions in the 80s. And blowing audiences away with brilliant performances in action, sci-fi, fantasy, drama, or horror films. William Bibiani wrote this piece, and he says, I grew up on Rutger Hauer's movies, watching Blade Runner and Lady Hawk and Blind Fury repeatedly on television. To me, he was as an iconic a movie star at that time as Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone. His persona wasn't steely or superficial. He was always thoughtful, playful, and full of hidden depths. His characters were rarely banal tough guys or two-dimensional villains. They were tragic figures whose violence was rarely, if ever, to be celebrated. In short, although he spent most of his career with roles in genre films, on some of them so-called B-movies, he was always an actor first and foremost. He elevated every project just by showing up and giving one hell of a performance. As we look back on Rutger Hauer's career, with an emphasis on his horror action sci-fi filmography, I'm just struck at how consistent he was. You could rely on Rutger Hauer in a movie. He was always worth watching. Younger generations probably know Rutger Hauer best from his fine supporting roles in movies like Batman Begins and Sin City. We're focusing today on the films that he gave out standout performances. These films were great specifically because Rutger Hauer was part of the productions, whether he was the star, the villain, or just a scene-stealing maniac. Rest in peace, Rutger Hauer, and your memories won't be lost. First one, number 14 on the list, is Surviving the Game, which was mentioned earlier. One of those favorite Let's Hunt Human movies. Rutger Hauer leads a team of rich psychopaths who lure a homeless man, played by Ice-T, to the forest to hunt him for sport. Surviving the Game doesn't add many new dimensions to the most dangerous game genre. But the dynamite cast, which includes Gary Busey, Charles S. Dutton, John C. McGinley, and F. Murray Abraham, and is satisfying action-packed direction by Ernest Dickerson. It's an excellent B-movie thriller anchored by a great villainous performance from Hauer. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have not. It's really good. I mean, the cast alone,
yeah,
you just mentioned it, is a lot of people that I have thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, no, it's a really entertaining movie. It came out in 1994. We're going to hunt humans movies. Well, I mean, look, you know, we had five of those Hunger Games movies, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah.
But the original Most Dangerous Game, that goes way back. But Surviving the Game, really a really good movie, and Howard's great in it. Split Second. This is the one we were talking about a little bit earlier. The year is 2008. This, by the way, came out in 1992, so it's a futuristic movie. The futuristic movie that takes place in 2008.
It reminds me of Escape from New York, the crime-ridden future of 1997.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the crime rate in 1991, the crime rate goes up 400%. I don't know if you know that or not.
Oh, my God.
Jamie Lee Curtis informs us of that. So, Split Second from 1992. The year is 2008, and global warming has flooded London, where a burned-out tough guy cop, Harley Stone, played by Hauer, tracks a serial killer who, it turns out, is a giant monster. Kim Cattrall, Neil Duncan, and Pete Postlethwaite co-star in this inventive, strange sci-fi thriller that's full of weird influences and unexpected plot twists. Hauer knows how to play the tortured tough guy, but he also knows how weird this material is and isn't afraid to veer into cheesiness to earn a good laugh. Been a really long time since I saw that movie, and I really enjoyed it. All right, let's see. 339 area code says, Nick, Howard, Nighthawks, Nuff said. Yeah, his American film debut was Nighthawks, and it was quite a great film debut.
An auspicious debut.
Yeah. Nobody knew who the guy was, but when it was over, it was like, whoa.
Who's this Hamlet-sounding guy?
Who is the guy who played Wolfgar? What's going on there? It's great. I mean, he's the movie. I've talked about this before. When I was 16, Nighthawks came out, and I thought it was the greatest movie of all time. I saw it like 900 times in the theater. I saw it a bunch of times on cable. But as you all know, if you're a regular listener to this show, I went back and watched it again like 20 years afterwards as like a full-on adult, and it sucks. Except for Rutger Hauer. Rutger Hauer is fantastic in it. But I call that now nighthawking. When I go back and watch a movie that I thought was good and turns out to be terrible, I call it, I just nighthawked that movie. So, but Rutger Hauer, what can you say about his performance? And it's a great performance. One of the most memorable American film debuts, seriously, of all time. Like, he really, and at that time, and Sylvester Stallone was massive at that time. Like, he was huge. Movie came out in 1981, and to basically steal a movie from Sylvester Stallone, and everybody, even the Stallone fans who went to see it, walked out and went, yeah, Stallone, fine, nice beard. But listen, who the hell was the guy who played the terrorist? Because he all but stole that entire movie. Terrific in it. 708 area code says, another good movie with Rutger Hauer is Deadlocked, where he starred with Mimi Rogers. It's a very good movie that captured the mixture of It Happened One Night and The 39 Steps with Explosive Necklaces. Deadlocked, I haven't seen that thing. That's an HBO movie, if I'm not mistaken. Deadlocked, I think, was made for HBO. So, all right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more from Bloody Disgusting, who picked some of the essential genre movies that Rutger Hauer is in. And if you want to jump in with your thoughts on Rutger Hauer and your memories and your favorites, the phone lines and text lines are open, 312-981-7200. And if you want to see this full article, just so you want to catch up and go back and watch a bunch of really, really great Rutger Hauer performances remembering him, we have this linked up on our Facebook page, the full article, with the titles of the movies and all that stuff. And all of these are available, and I would recommend watching them. So you can go to Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. More Rutger Hauer coming up right after this. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on WGN. And, we're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. That's Utopia, Todd Rundgren's band. They have a really hilarious album cover where on the back it says Utopia. The title of it is Utopia, outstanding in their outstanding in their field, and it's them standing in a field.
I don't know what I expected.
Standing in their field. Oh man! All right, we've been talking about the great Rutger Hauer. He passed away, 75 years old, and he's left behind so many great performances and so many great movies. I know that Steve King and Johnny Putman absolutely love the movie Lady Hawk, which is they've been championing that movie. I remember when it came out in the 80s, whatever year that was, 85. And, we talked about it on the show. I was, I appeared on their show once a month. I was on Roy's show every Saturday reviewing the movies, and then I was on their show the first Sunday night, Monday morning of each month to preview the next month's movies. And they loved Lady Hawk. Like, they loved that movie. I have not seen Lady Hawk in a very, very long time. But Michelle Pfeiffer's is in it. So right there, that was Matthew Broderick. That was pre Ferris Bueller. So I didn't hate him because he was in War Games, and I still liked him. So I didn't hate him, and I don't hate him now. In fact, I really like Matthew Broderick a lot. And again, I wouldn't have recommended The Freshman so fervently had I not. You know what I mean? But Lady Hawk, people really love that movie. It's got a very, very, very passionate fan base led by Stephen Johnny. Do we have some audio from Lady Hawk?
Yeah, this is a scene between him and Matthew Broderick here, and he's explaining the significance of his sword.
This sword has been in my family for 5 generations. It has never known defeat until now. This jewel represents my family name. This one is our alliance with the Holy Church in Rome. Huh? This one was my father's. Hmm? From the Crusades. And this.
Oh, sir, you don't think I took that one?
This is mine to fill. Each generation is called upon to follow its own quest.
And what is your quest?
I must kill a man.
There you go. God, what a great voice.
I must kill a man.
Jeez, boy, Matthew Broderick sounded like he was 12.
What is your quest? You know, I really felt that they didn't need to shoehorn the twist and shout dance scene into this. It just doesn't fit.
God almighty. All right. Let's get back to some more of the great Rutger Hauer movies that you should see. I mentioned this one when we were talking with Dan Feinberg. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind from 2002. The directorial debut of George Clooney with an unbelievably awesome Sam Rockwell. Well, that just goes without saying. just assume his performance is unbelievably awesome because he's Sam Rockwell. Tom, you've seen Moon, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Which is 10 years old now.
Is it really?
Yeah, 2009. Oh, directed by David Bowie's kid.
Well, wow. He's a good sci-fi director because he directed that time travel train movie with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah, Source Code.
Yeah, great movie.
You can tell it's a really scary movie because it takes place on the Metra.
Yeah. No, that's a really cool movie.
I liked it.
Yeah.
It's just that...
Duncan Jones.
Yeah, everything since, though, has been kind of...
What else has he done?
He did Warcraft.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. That's Duncan Jones.
Oh, man.
And then he did the follow-up to Moon, Mute, which is really bad.
Yeah.
And just borrows really heavily from Blade Runner visually, but is story-wise just incomprehensible.
I didn't realize he did Warcraft.
Yeah, that's him.
Because those first two movies are great.
They really are.
Moon and Source Code are both great.
I hope he makes more. But, yeah. You know, because they can't all be zingers.
No.
You know?
But anyway, The Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Here's what they say. Rutger Hauer plays a small but fantastic role in George Clooney's directorial debut based on the highly implausible autobiography of of Chuck Barris, who claimed when he wasn't creating The Dating Game and The Gong Show that he was a CIA assassin. and he totally went for it, too. Like, no, seriously.
Yeah.
Sam Rockwell is perfectly strange and charming as Chuck Barris. By the way, he's so good. Sam Rockwell is really good. If anybody is familiar with Chuck Barris, if anybody watched The Gong Show, as I did, it was a very similar... I mean, I was... Like, when The Gong Show was popular, I was like 12, 13, and I watched it all the time, and of course, I loved it. But he did such a great job in that movie as Chuck Barris. It's just such a ridiculous movie, and I have to say, I thought it was a really interesting first film for Clooney to direct. But that's pretty cool that's your first choice out of the gate is to do this Chuck Barris movie. But it's Hauer playing a fellow assassin who fancies himself a bit of a shutterbug who steals the show from the future Oscar winner. He truly loves his work, as barbaric as it is. You can't help admire him for him. You can't help admire him for it a little. Yeah, he's great in it. And it was one of those deals where, like, when I went to see it, and Rutger Hauer hadn't done a lot of big, you know, hadn't done a lot of big movies. It was a pretty good stretch of time where we had not seen Rutger Hauer on the screen. And when I didn't know he was in the movie. And when he popped up in the movie, I was like, oh, it's Rutger Hauer. Like, it was this extra lovely bonus treat. Like, look at that. It's Rutger Hauer's in this movie. So, 630 area code says Rutger was great in Hobo with a Shotgun. That's Chris in Elk Grove. Yeah, that movie had no business being as fun as it was.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, do you remember how that even came about?
I do not. I know that it was like it was fake, like somebody.
Yeah, so they
it was kind of like how the stupid Machete movies got made.
Well, that's the thing. It was there was a contest for Grindhouse. They were like, send in a trailer and we might include it locally in your region. And it was these Canadian guys that made a fake trailer, Hobo with a Shotgun, and it played in Canada.
Yeah.
In front of some of the screenings, and they were just like, actually, this is a really good idea. Let's make this into a movie.
I wish they would have made Don't into a movie.
That will never not make me laugh.
It is the best part of anything to do with Grindhouse. And I don't like Planet Terror. I love Death Proof. But the best thing in anything that has to do with Grindhouse is Edgar Wright's trailer for Don't. It is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. I remember seeing Grindhouse. I could not stop laughing. So... 301 area code says, I might be mistaken, but he was definitely in the Osterman. Yes, he was in the Osterman Weekend, which is a tremendous movie. Have you seen the Osterman Weekend?
I have not. Oh, what is the Osterman
Weekend? That would be Sam Peckinpah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So you might want to check it out. It's got crossbows and some slow motion and John Hurt. It's
crossbows.
Yeah.
John Hurt.
Slow motion. Peckinpah.
All right, we're good.
Rutger Hauer.
Oh, jeez. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. So, all right, let's take a break. We've got a few more of these movies here that we want to tell you about. The essential movies to celebrate the great Rutger Hauer. And if you want to jump in with your thoughts on the great Rutger Hauer, 312-981-7200. Great song. Great song. Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. You hear me, Triple Play Thursday? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're here until 5 a.m. A little bit later on, we are going to talk about the unhealthiest fast food burgers ranked.
Woo.
Yeah. And this will either, whenever we talk about like fast food and we talk about some of these things, when you get into the calorie count and the amount of fat in some of these, it's just mind boggling. I mean, it really is. And I have not looked at this list, but I'm guessing Hardee's makes multiple appearances.
Yeah.
Or Carl's Jr., either one of those two.
I've only ever had Hardee's one time. And,
well, you diss on Arby's, man. And Hardee's.
I do diss on Arby's.
That's insane.
For good reason.
No.
Yes.
Arby's rules. Arby's is one of the greatest fast food establishments in the history of this nation.
I want you to take a moment sometime and look into where that quote unquote roast beef.
I don't care what it is.
It's a meat tube.
I don't care what it is. Quite frankly, it tastes fantastic.
It's sweaty beef is what it is.
The beef and cheddar sandwich at Arby's is one of the greatest fast food items in the history of fast food. The beef and cheddar at Arby's is unbelievable.
With the onion bun, correct?
Exactly right.
Oh, yeah.
You got the toast.
I'm getting it from both sides here.
You got the well, listen, man. One of the first times you started dissing Arby's when you started working with me on this show, do you remember what happened?
Yeah,
the wrath of my listeners came down upon Tom Hush.
That is true. Listen. Where's the nearest? Do you know where the nearest Arby's is?
Well, that's the unfortunate thing. I don't know if the one in Merchandise Mart is still open, but that's the one that I used to go to.
Okay.
That when I would come down to work, because I used to work Saturday evenings here, and I would take the train down to the Merchandise Mart stop. I would get off, have me like a couple of beef and cheddars and some potato cakes, and then make my way to work, fueled up on beef and cheddar. And not only that, Vic, but it's not only on the toasted onion, the onion roll. It's also it's the fantastic Arby's roast beef. With the Arby's sauce, the red Arby's sauce,
oh yeah,
and the cheddar cheese sauce, not like a slice of cheese, but it's the cheddar cheese. It's the cheddar cheese sauce, which makes all the difference in the world.
Okay, here's what I'll do. I will the next time I'm near an Arby's, I give you my word. I give you my word that I will go in and I will give it another shot.
And
I will send you a video of me play by play eating a
pizza. It's going to be very difficult to find an Arby's. They used to be all over the place. They used to be in the city. You know, the one that I went to when I was growing up was on Ashland near Belmont, and we used to go to that one all the time. There was one on Peterson or near Peterson. There was one in the loop right by Goodman Theater, where the Goodman Theater is. There used to be one there. I used to eat at that one. There was one on Harlem near Irving. There was another one. There were Arby's sprinkled throughout the neighborhoods in the city, and now they're all gone. And like I said, I haven't been to the Merchandise Mart in a long time, but that was the only one that I was familiar with, you know, that was in the city, was the one that was the Merchandise Mart. That's the one that I went to all the time. So, yeah, but Arby's, man, fantastic. So, yeah. But, yeah, we're going to get into the fast food, the unhealthy fast food stuff coming up a little bit later.
I do have to say they're already coming at
me. I'm telling you, man, you do not diss Arby's on the Nick DiGilio show. That's not a good move, man. And people love the
rookie.
Curly fries.
Rookie.
Yeah. Thanks, Vic.
People love the curly fries, too, man. Don't diss on the curly fries. I happen to prefer the potato cakes. I like the potato cakes. Do you like the potato cakes, Vic?
Oh, yes.
Those are my favorite.
They're so good.
They're so fantastic. And every once in a while, Vic, you get a little treat. Because if you order the potato cakes,
you might
get a few curly fries in there.
So true. That is so funny. It's so true, though.
Now, I got to tell you something. Now I'm jonesing for an Arby's. I'm jonesing for a beef and cheddar right now. I can't tell you how much I want a beef and cheddar right now. Ugh. I don't even know where they are. I don't even know if there are any Arby's anywhere. Does anybody know if the Merchandise Mart still has an Arby's in there, in their food court? Because they got a big food court, including a Billy Goat. They got a Billy Goat in the Merchandise Mart. So you can get yourself a cheeseburger. Yeah, so it's a pretty big food mart there, food court in the Merchandise Mart. But the one go-to, I mean, I didn't go to any other place in the Merchandise Mart food court other than Arby's. That was the only one. It's the only place I would go to. So, all right. Yeah, we are going to get to unhealthy, some insanely unhealthy fast food burgers. That'll be coming up. 312-981-7200. Remembering Rutger Hauer. Let's get back to Rutger Hauer. Bloody Disgusting put an article together saying, hey, if you want to see some essential movies, here are 14 titles that are essential Rutger Hauer that you have to see. Coming up here next on the list is Fatherland from 1994. Hauer stars as Nazi SS major in 1964, decades after Germany won the war and conquered all of Europe. Now, just before an important diplomatic summit in America, retired Nazi officers are getting murdered, and it's up to Hauer to solve the mystery and uncover the horrifying cover-up in world history. Audiences know exactly where Hauer's investigation will lead him in this alternate reality whodunit. But that very surreal self-awareness lends the story a layer of morbidity, and this award-winning HBO production was largely forgotten over the past 25 years, but it warrants rediscovery today. And as we mentioned before, he's in the movie version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer from 1992. The original Buffy the Vampire Slayer was quickly overshadowed by the superior television series, but there's a lot to like about the jokier version. Christy Swanson plays Buffy, a teenager who discovers she's the latest in a long line of vampire hunters and gets trained by Donald Sutherland to destroy the immortal bloodsucker Lothos, played by the delightfully campy Rutger Hauer. The actor had an excellent sense of humor when his roles allowed him to use it, and his comedic chemistry with the great Paul Rubens, who has one of the best death scenes in vampire movie history, is cheerfully diabolic. Yeah, he's great in that. He's really great in that. And I like the movie. I didn't like the series. I'm so alone on that island. I know I'm completely alone in that room. I used to call that the Joe Dirt room.
What, because you're a fan of Joe
Dirt? I love Joe Dirt.
Well, I mean, Joe Dirt's amazing.
I love Joe Dirt. But I'd be like, hello? Anybody here? I'm in the Joe Dirt fan club room. This is the Joe Dirt room, and apparently I'm alone. I caught hell when that movie came out. Because I gave it a great review. I said it was like a really hilarious take on Forrest Gump. Because it's like Joe Dirt is like Forrest Gump in that movie.
Yeah, Joe Dirt.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. I thought it was great.
I picked it up watching it on cable a lot. It was on Comedy Central like every day of the week.
Joe Dirt 2 sucks. Joe Dirt 2 is terrible.
Oh, yeah, no, that's sad.
And I don't like David Spade. See, that's the thing. That's another thing is I'm not a fan.
Not even in, like, Tommy Boy and stuff?
Well,
like that?
Tommy, yeah. I mean, him and, you know.
When he's paired up with someone,
yeah.
I mean,
I love Tommy Boy. And I can't stand Black Sheep, though. I did not like Black Sheep. Black Sheep was terrible. There are only a couple of laughs in Black Sheep. But Tommy Boy is a movie I could watch 24/7. His chemistry with Farley was great. I mean, with the two of them together, fantastic.
Sure.
But I like all the snarky stuff, like he did the Hollywood Minute and all that. And you are, all that stuff got tiresome. He's got a new show coming on, a late night show following The Daily Show on Comedy Central now. And he was
really?
I'm just not a fan. Like I didn't like him on Just Shoot Me. I don't watch the Terms of what the hell is it called? Terms of Endearment.
Oh, Terms of Rules of Engagement.
It's Terms of Endearment. It's the TV version of the Shirley MacLaine, Deborah Winger drama.
And David Spade plays Shirley MacLaine.
Sure, it's David Spade plays the John Lithgow part. Joe Dirt was one of those deals, man. So
that's okay.
But yeah, and then back in that lonely room, I'm in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. Hello? Hello? Anybody else like the movie more than the series? We have weather?
Yeah.
Okay. And then next here is, of course, we mentioned this one a bunch of times, Nighthawks from 1981. This is really one of the best first performances, like American film debuts of all time. Rutger Hauer made his American debut in Bruce Malmuth. Oh, man, Bruce Malmuth.
That's a mouthful.
I remember, you know, like after Nighthawks, I was like, ooh, what is Bruce Malmuth going to direct next? He did this movie. Tom, you're going to love this. He back in the like 83. 3D made a comeback, and it was because of Friday the 13th Part 3. There was Coming At Ya. There was Jaws 3D. So for some reason, like right around 83, Parasite in 3D with the Demi Moore's first movie.
Oh wow,
a horror movie. So the 3D craze happened in the early 80s, and one of the movies that was that was in 3D. Was Bruce Malmuth's follow-up to Nighthawks, and it's called The Man Who Wasn't There, and it was Steve Guttenberg, and it was a 3D Invisible Man movie.
Oh God!
I think it was called The Man Who Wasn't There, and it was part of the big 1983 3D craze that lasted for about 8 months. And this was not the kind of 3D we see now, you know, not the high tech 3D that you saw with Avatar, and you know, whenever you go to
the red and blue glasses.
It wasn't red and blue, but they were cardboard glasses that you would put on, because red and blue was just the earliest technology. This was the second wave of 3D.
Good Lord!
And there were a ton of them, and you can thank Friday the 13th for that, because Friday the 13th Part 3 was was a massive hit.
Well, and it introduced the hockey mask.
Yeah. Yep. And
I can't believe that.
But yeah, anyway, Bruce Malmuth's second movie after Nighthawks was a Steve Guttenberg 3D comedy.
That's just why?
Yeah. But anyway, Nighthawks, it was originally developed to be French Connection 3. But eventually it became a standalone film starring Sylvester Stallone and Billy Dee Williams as cops trying to catch a terrorist. Rutger Hauer played the villain, an alluring but disturbing monster who puts Stallone's New York cop through the ringer. Nighthawks feels like it's halfway between a fun Stallone thriller and a serious terrorism drama. Whether that's entirely satisfying may be up to the individual viewer, but Hauer is clearly the film's centerpiece, making a name for himself as a handsome but dangerous lead and setting himself up for an impressive international career. So there you go. All right, let's take a break for some weather, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the essential Rutger Hauer movies that you need to see, and we want to hear from you guys. About the great Rutger Hauer at 312-981-7200. Right, Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. How's everybody doing this Thursday morning? Triple Play Thursday. You mean Triple Play Thursday? Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Rasco. A little bit of the grassroots.
That's right, grassroots, man. All right. Hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. As you no doubt heard, the great Rutger Hauer has passed away. And we're going through this article that bloody-disgusting.com put together. And again, you can check out the full article on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow about the essential Rutger Hauer movies. Now, here's one I've not seen. That in looking at the description, evidently I must see this. It's called Hostile Waters from 1997. Rutger Hauer leads an excellent cast in this made-for-TV disaster thriller based on the true story of the K-219 Soviet submarine.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
Rutger Hauer and a submarine
Rutger
movie?
Hauer in a submarine movie! Man, oh, man.
Look at that cast.
My dreams have come true. Who else is in it?
Martin Sheen.
Oh, man.
And Max von Sydow.
Come on now!
But three of the best.
Oh, man.
In a sub.
How have I not seen, for those people who don't know, there's a little, I have this little thing about me. I love every submarine movie ever made. I love them. It's like my favorite subgenre, no pun intended, I love submarine movies. I did not know that Rutger Hauer was in a submarine movie made for TV. An undersea collision is flooding the vessel, which leads to a chain reaction that fills the submarine with poison gas and can set off the nuclear weapons inside. Is this also based on... This has got to be the story that Catherine Bigelow made, too, right? It's got to be based on that incident.
Because
it was K-19, and they say it's K-219.
Maybe it is...
Because the movie was called K-19.
Yeah, K-19, the Widowmaker.
Yeah. With Harrison Ford. Sarsgaard's in it. I love that movie. Meanwhile, the American fleet thinks Hauer's ship is about to nuke the United States and prepares... Yeah, this is the same story. And prepares them while they... are desperately trying to save their own lives to prevent World War III. Although it lacks the production value of sub-thrillers like Crimson Tide or The Hunt for Red October, the film has all the tension of a grade-A blockbuster, and Rutger Hauer's sharp performance provides exceptional anchor. I need to see this. I really desperately need to see this. A submarine movie with Rutger Hauer? What is happening here?
Yeah. Although, I'm looking at... K-19, The Widowmaker, there's nothing that says explicitly
that it's based on that story.
It's based on that, but I'm guessing
it's clearly
inspired.
I mean, it's the same plot, basically.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, all right, well, I need to see that. Hostile Waters. All right, Lady Hawk is next. We talked about Lady Hawk. And then The Blood of Heroes. This is the one that I want to mention big time. From David Webb Peebles, the writer of Unforgiven and co-writer of Blade Runner, comes a post-apocalyptic sci-fi sports movie. Like no other, Rutger Hauer stars as the captain of a team of roving athletes who travel from town to town challenging local teams in a sport they play with dog skulls. If they win, they are paid in tribute, but the affluent cities are building their own leagues, and the stakes become brutally high. Hauer leads an impressive cast that includes Joan Chen, Delroy Lindo, and Vincent D'Onofrio, and helped transform this very, very bizarre concept into one of the most satisfying and unsung post-apocalyptic thrillers. And I echo that statement. I echo that statement completely. A wholly original movie. The whole sport, they really explain it well. You've never seen anything like it. It's a great movie. We mentioned Blind Fury, which stars Rutger Hauer as a blind swordsman. And then, of course, Hobo with a Shotgun, which came out in 2011. Which he's really great in, and of course we know the story behind that, how that movie got made. And number three on the list is Flesh and Blood. Before Paul Verhoeven made a splash in America with RoboCop, which, by the way, he wanted Rutger Hauer to star in, but the studio said no. He made this vicious and subversive historical thriller called Flesh and Blood. He stars as the leader of a gang of mercenaries who kidnap a young maiden played by Jennifer Jason Leigh. They take over a castle. They fight off the siege of soldiers, and they fall victim to the plague. There's no hint of romanticism in Verhoeven's epic, only sex, violence, and disease. Geez, that sounds like Verhoeven, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's a really terrific movie. Number two here, of course, is The Hitcher. C. Thomas Howell picks up a hitchhiker in the middle of the desert and proceeds to have his life utterly destroyed. Rutger Hauer plays the title character, an unstoppable maniac whose crimes are so unbelievably monstrous that no one believes they actually happened. As he hunts Howell and his flesh and blood co-star Jennifer Jason Leigh across the dunes, shooting helicopters out of the sky, strapping innocent people between trucks, and gradually revealing himself as one of the most ultimate boogeymen. Unstoppable, even to his own horror, The Hitcher is Hauer's most frightening role, and it's a spectacular, thrilling movie. And then finally, number one on the list, as we all know, is Blade Runner. Rutger Hauer gives his most iconic performance in Ridley Scott's trailblazing sci-fi masterpiece, playing the replicant Roy Batty, an artificial human being who will stop at nothing to live longer than he's programmed to. He does villainous things, but the depth of the storyline, built upon the mind-blowing ideas of Philip K. Dick, presents his quest in an existential journey, a man visiting the gods who made him and demanding the respect he deserves. His final scene, as he ponders the brief but wondrous events in his life, as his timer ticks down, is one of the most powerful scenes of its kind and gives Scott's stylish production a beautiful, tragic soul. So those are just those are some of the essential movies to see Rutger Hauer, the late, great Rutger Hauer. And again, it's really crazy that it's 2019. Rutger Hauer dies in 2019. Blade Runner takes place in 2019. And his most iconic role, his most iconic character, Roy Batty, also dies in 2019. So there's something poetic and weird about that. Rutger Hauer dies 2019. Roy Batty dies 2019. Anyway. Remembering the great Rutger Hauer. All right. Let's break here for some news, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk really unhealthy fast food right after this. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Grassroots there for Triple Play Thursday. You're being Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And yeah. So we're here until 5 a.m. And yeah. So we're talking about now the unhealthiest fast food burgers ranked. And if some of the crazy concoctions, what's the craziest fast food concoction that you've ever had? 312-981-7200. Some of these are really good, but I mean insane. All right, the one that I can't believe that is actually a real thing is that the KFC Cheeto chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
With the Cheeto sauce
and actual
Cheetos on it.
It's a bold move.
My ex-girlfriend might have liked that one.
Yeah.
But like the commercial, it just seems like it's such a fake thing. Because they got the what's his face?
Chester.
You're right. Chester dressed up like the Colonel. And it's these kids, you know, they're at the skate park, because, all those kids, they do their little skateboarding. And they're like, hey, man, I'm tired of all these stupid fast food, boring fast food, man. And then Cheeto shows up. What's his name? Chester.
Chester, yeah.
Shows up and goes, I got a sandwich for you. That doesn't sound like Chester at all. Doesn't Chester have a British accent? Is he British?
No, he's kind of like more like a jazz guy. Like, hey, I got the...
But doesn't he have a British accent?
No.
He doesn't?
No. Well, at least I don't think so. Maybe, oh, God, maybe he does.
I think he does have a British accent.
But it's like a British guy who's really into jazz.
But he's like, it's go time. Because like then they end up, I don't see, it looks like a beluga whale. It's go time. I actually think that Chester is pretty funny.
I love Chester Cheetah.
But he shows up at the skate park. I think he's on skates, too. I've got this sandwich for you. That sounds like Gary Busey showed up and said, I got something for you right now.
He's banned from skate park.
It's got a... Yeah.
Especially if kids are around.
Kids are around. No kids around. I can't be around. 500 feet. Got to be 500 feet. I'll throw the Cheeto sandwich to you, kid, but I can't. Okay, I'll have it mailed. I'll mail it in. Might be a little soggy when it shows up because it's got to go to the U.S. mail. But you're going to enjoy your Cheeto sandwich with the Cheeto sauce. I thought it was a joke. I thought for a second I tuned into an episode of SNL, and I was like, is this a... But no, it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah, this is the postmodern hellscape we live in these days.
I just... I got an idea. We'll make up some Cheeto sauce. So it's just basically cheese sauce is what it is. And we'll put it on the chicken breast. And then cover it all in sauce. And then, well, you know what? Hell with it. Let's go all in. Throw a bunch of Cheetos on there, too. Good Lord. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Blowing weed, coming up with ideas for your fast food menu. Well, KFC is the one that did create the double down. Which, of course, you know, instead of a bun, it was two pieces of fried chicken. That was your...
Yeah.
That was your bread.
And then it was just kind of like Thousand Island dressing and bacon.
It was a special secret sauce, bacon and cheese in between.
My God.
Yeah. This is one of the craziest. But this Cheeto thing, I honestly thought it was a joke. I was like, can't be a real item.
It's on my list. I just got to try it at least once.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm not going to try it. But it just seems absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some. What are some of the most insane fast food items that you've ever tried? 312-981-7200. We're talking specifically here of burgers. So this was MSN.com put this thing together, and they said fast food has a bad reputation in the health world for a number of reasons. These foods are notorious for containing far too many calories and a hefty amount of unhealthy fat and sodium, in addition to a long list of additives and preservatives that you are often hard to even pronounce, let alone things that you'd want to eat and put in your body. One of the most popular fast food items is, hands down, the burger. And there are a lot of variations on this menu item. Not only are they notorious on menus of America's top restaurant chains, which has been rounded up, but they are also readily available at your go-to fast food restaurants, too. We decided to figure out which ones were the worst for your health at these quick service places. So the methodology is, in order to identify the unhealthiest fast food burgers in America, we compiled a list of the most caloric burgers from 17 of the most popular fast food restaurants nationwide. The burgers with the most calories in most cases also have the highest total fat, saturated fat, trans fat, and sodium contents as well. To break ties, we chose the burger with a greater amount of sodium and deemed that one less healthy. We also considered the top three most unhealthy burgers at each restaurant to ensure we represented a diverse range of restaurants on the list. We also only considered fast food restaurants that provide all the nutritional information. No sides were considered in this ranking either. Every burger on this list has at least 1,000 calories.
What? That's half. That's half, like, the average daily caloric intake.
At least 1,000 calories, every one of them.
What the hell?
So here they are, the 15 most unhealthy fast food restaurant burgers in the country, ranked from the least unhealthy to the absolute worst of the worst. Notice that a lot of the burgers on this list either contain three beef patties or include several slices of bacon. And for some, they contain both. Okay, here's the first one. Culver's. Well, they do call them butter burgers.
Mm-hmm.
The Culver's Mushroom and Swiss Butter Burger Triple. The Mushroom and Swiss Butter Burger Triple. You ready? 1,060 calories, 69 grams of fat, 28 grams saturated fat, 2.1 grams trans fat, 968 milligrams of sodium, 44 grams of carbs, 68 grams protein. This triple patty stacker is packing in calories and fat, which makes it one of the least healthy fast food burgers out there. While button mushrooms that are sautéed in butter and seasoned with pepper, parsley, garlic, and salt still sit between the three beef patties, there's nothing. There wasn't enough butter already with the mushrooms. That's the coating on the bun. For some, this burger contains the entire day's worth of protein at nearly 70 grams.
My God.
I love Culver's, though.
Yeah, they're opening one up not far from me over on Montrose.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
We had one open up about a year and a half ago, was it, or 2 years ago? Six Corners, right by, not very far from where I live.
That must be bopping.
It's packed constantly.
Yeah.
Packed constantly.
Who doesn't love Culver's?
And you know, it's really because it's right on Irving
yeah.
Park, and that and in like you know the drive-through is always packed, so there's a backup right on Irving, and this is just west of Six Corners, which is a pretty busy place already. Like that area is really, really, really busy on the northwest side, and so that you can just see the pileup of cars. You're like, oh, everybody's going to Culver's.
Everybody's trying to get a Butterburger.
Yep, and they got one right next to the Norwich Theater too on Harlem. Okay, here's Carl's Jr. I knew these guys would be well represented. Carl's Jr.'s half-pound bacon truffle Angus burger. It's 1,050 calories, 69 grams of fat. Whoa. Whoa. Are you ready for the sodium?
Oh, no.
2,150 milligrams of sodium.
You'd be better off just literally chugging a container of Morton salt.
Unbelievable. 54 grams of carbs, 54 grams of protein. I can't believe that this is number 14. There's still 13 worse than this. Notice that this burger has about 10 calories less than the Culver's Mushroom and Swiss Butter Burger. But what makes this burger an even less healthy option, it packs 2,150 milligrams of sodium. That's nearly the equivalent of 2,300 milligrams of sodium that is recommended to consume in one day. Applewood smoked bacon, fried onion rings, mayonnaise, Swiss cheese all contribute to the burger's sky-high sodium count. That's absolutely insane. And the fact that there's like 13 that are worse. All right, what are the craziest fast food items you've ever had? 312-981-7200. Wow. And has anybody tried the Cheeto burger? The Cheeto burger. The Cheeto sandwich, whatever the hell it is. Chicken Cheeto Village, whatever it is. Eat it. 312-981-7200. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Grassroots on Triple Play Thursday. You hear me, Triple Play Thursday? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. And we are talking about the most unhealthy fast food burgers, and they're ranked, according to MSN.com. And we want to know about some of the craziest fast food items that you guys have ever had. 708 area code says, I'm very hesitant with Five Guys burgers because I see diabetes written all over, so I just go there for their addictive Cajun fries. I think Five Guys is great. I like Five Guys.
I think it's a little overpriced.
Well, a lot of those places are you know, I mean, I think Culver's is a little hefty too. But I like Five. I think Five Guys is good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
804 area code says Burger King's chicken rings. How does a chicken do that? That's not Burger King. That's White Castle.
Yeah, White Castle.
White Castle's the chicken rings.
They're super good though.
They're awesome.
There are some days I'll get a White Castle and my girlfriend will come home and she'll see, like, you know, there's little slider boxes and she just looks at me like a dog. She's like, you're an animal.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with you.
But they're good, man.
They're so good.
Sliders are good. Sometimes I buy, you know what, man? Sometimes I buy the frozen ones.
Yeah. You got
them at the grocery store at the Jewels.
I get them. They got them at Aldi too.
Throw them right in the microwave. 2 minutes. Boom. Sliders. Can't do it too often, though. I used to be able to eat sliders when I was in my 20s. Go out, get smashed, eat about 12 sliders, and then, you know, then wake up in the morning and be fine. And then it got to the point where I'd hit, like, 40, and I'd do that, and I'd be like, what the hell happened last night? Because, you know, Factory Theater used to work out of the Prop Theater,
mm-hmm.
which is on Elston, which is walking distance to a White Castle. So we would drink ourselves silly at Chief O'Neill's, and I would inevitably, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, end up at that White Castle at Addison and Kedzie, eating the sliders that I shouldn't be eating in my 40s. 312 area code says, well, at least a burger is a 1,000-calorie meal. A frosted honey bun is 500 calories, but that's empty calories. Very true. Very true. Okay, next. Whataburger's Chop House Cheddar Burger. Whataburger's Chop House Cheddar Burger. Now, we don't have Whataburgers here in Illinois, do we?
No, I think they're mostly in Texas.
Yeah.
Right?
I think you're right.
And in and around there.
Well, here it is. 1,080 calories, 67 grams of fat, 25 of which are saturated. 1,590 milligrams of sodium, 60 grams of carbs, 60 grams of protein. What's in this Whataburger Chop House Cheddar Burger? Well, it's bacon, beef, a lot of cheese, and cheese sauce. It makes sense why this burger is loaded in saturated fat. Interestingly, the burger also packs 11 grams of added sugar. For context, 2 twisted strawberry blast Twizzlers contain the same amount of sugar. The American Heart Association suggests that women consume no more than 25 grams of added sugar a day, and that men consume no more than 36 grams. So if you're a woman, this burger cancels out half of your daily allowance of added sugar, regardless of gender and calories. Whataburger makes another entry here. Whataburger's Mushroom Swiss Burger. Whataburger's Mushroom Swiss Burger. 1,080 calories, 69 grams of fat, 23 of which are saturated, 1,780 milligrams of sodium, 69 grams of carbs, 55 grams protein. Another Mushroom Swiss Burger makes the unhealthiest fast food burgers list. Whataburger's version of the Tasty Burger is slightly less healthy than the Culver's, and this is because of its higher calorie and sodium content. In fact, this burger packs about twice as much sodium as the Culver burger does, which has 968 milligrams. So almost twice as much. Culver's, again, back on the list. Now, they're going for a triple. You don't necessarily have to get a triple, but it's the Culver's Bacon Deluxe, and they're going for the triple. 1,090 calories. 76 grams of fat, 29.5 saturated, 1,430 milligrams of sodium, 42 grams carbs, 60 grams protein. As if the Culver's Deluxe sandwich wasn't already a triple whammy with 3 beef patties, the bacon version is even more so, with a few slices of bacon sandwiched between the bun, too. 76 grams of total fat. This sandwich has as much fat as 15 tablespoons of just plain cream cheese. Oh, my God. Oh, boy. I don't know, man. 312-981-7200. What are the craziest fast food creations that you've ever had? Whataburger's Monterey Melt. Boy, Whataburger is just piling up the entries here. Whataburger's Monterey Melt. 1,110 calories, 71 grams of fat, 24 saturated. Oh, my God. 2,510 milligrams of sodium, 62 gram carbs, 54 grams of protein. The Monterey Melt at Whataburger has as many calories as 10 slices of Swiss cheese. That's 28 grams each. Another alarming thing about this burger is its sodium content is at a staggering 2,510 milligrams, which is well over the maximum suggested amount of 2,300 milligrams. To compare, if you devour 10 slices of Swiss, you will consume 520 milligrams of sodium. So it's healthier to eat 10 slices of Swiss cheese. It's healthier to just eat 10 slices of Swiss cheese.
Oh, boy. That used to be a thing I would do as a kid, would just eat slices of cheese.
Oh, of course.
That's the best.
Yeah. No, I used to eat slices of cheese, too. Just loved them.
Kraft singles.
take peel off the plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of the Kraft, unless you're making a cheeseburger.
I've given up on Kraft singles. I won't eat them.
Yeah. They melt really. American cheese, that kind of stuff melts.
Oh, melts really
it
good.
Melts really well for burgers. It really does. Sure. And for grilled cheese. You know, it's the classic grilled cheese. But, you know, that's the singles of the plastic single wrapped, you know, American cheese. That's what you eat when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And then you grow up and you have things like
real cheese, you know.
Camembert.
Although American cheese, you know, the processed cheese, it's real, but it's just not, you know.
Yeah. Well, and you can get American style cheese that's actually good.
Yeah.
Get American style cheddar.
Just get some cheddar, man.
Yeah, dude.
So, but hey, you know, here's a little something. You probably don't remember this. Do you remember when they sold peanut butter and jelly singles?
Wait, just like as a sandwich?
No.
Or
No. You know how the cheese, the processed cheese is packaged?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they sold jelly and slices of peanut butter like that. Because you know how difficult it is to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It was processed peanut butter, processed jelly, wrapped like a Kraft single. So you would take a slice of peanut butter, put it on the bread, take a slice of jelly, put it on the bread, and have your peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
When was this?
Late 90s. Look it up.
I believe it.
It was it, and I tried it because Gary Lee Wright and I, my old partner and I, were like, okay, we got to try this.
Yeah, see what this is.
And
yeah.
it became like this sort of like, you know, fad. It didn't last very long because it was disgusting. It was disgusting. It really was. Like it was like a Kraft single. Wrapped in plastic, you would open it up, and it's a slice of peanut butter.
That is shocking.
And it in a square, just like a Kraft single, you put it on the bread, maybe a couple, and then you'd take your slice of jelly, shaped exactly like a Kraft single, wrapped in that plastic, you'd put it on the bread, and then you'd eat it. We tried it on air, and it was one of the most disgusting things I've ever tasted in my life.
Have you tried the mixed together, like the pre-mixed
goober.
Yeah, goober.
Goober rules, man.
Yeah. I used to be really into that because they would do that and they would do peanut butter and chocolate as
yeah.
well.
I grew up on goober. That was, you know, like the thing about goober was, you know how when you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you have to, you know, you have to clean off the knife because you don't want to get your peanut butter in your jelly and you don't want to get your jelly in your peanut butter.
Uh-huh.
Goober doesn't matter. Stick the knife in, slap it all over the bread, and throw the knife in the sink.
Done.
Done, man. I don't have time for this. I don't have time to rinse off or wipe off a butter knife so that I don't get peanut butter in my jelly or jelly in my peanut butter. Just get the goober and go nuts.
I know a guy who uses two separate knives, and I've told him.
Come on!
Like, you're just wasting a knife. He's like, yeah, but at least I know I'm clean and...
Come on.
He's out of his mind.
He should just get goober and end it all. Get a jar of goober, one knife, slap it on, eat it, and shut up. That's what you do.
That should really just be the tagline for goober. Eat it and shut up.
Get one knife, slap on the goober, eat it, and shut up. All right, we've got to take a break here. We'll take a break. We've got the news coming up, and then we'll talk more about these disgusting but probably very tasty and unhealthy fast food burgers. News is up after this. Fairies wear boots, man. You got to believe me. Such a jam. We're only going to get to hear two Black Sabbath songs on Triple Play Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Who requested the Sabbath?
That's coming to us from the 815.
All right, 815. You got good taste. Fairies wear boots from the first album I ever bought, Paranoid. I love Sabbath. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are talking about some really unhealthy fast food burgers, and we're getting into the top ones here, and also asking you about some of the crazy fast food concoctions or the craziest stuff that you've had. 815 area code says, Nick, I really enjoyed the bacon cheeseburger burrito from Taco Bell, and I wish they would bring it back. Sounds good to me. 708 area code says, I'm going to try the pizza pot pie tonight for my birthday.
Yeah, that's
pizza pot. Are you talking about oven grinders?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Yeah, that's what I've always called it. Like, people ask me what it is. I'm like, it's like a pizza pot pie.
Oh.
Because that's... I mean,
would just call it oven grinders pizza. I've never called it a pot pie. That place is great.
Yeah. Just get there early.
Yeah.
Long wait.
Always packed. Always packed. Yeah, I didn't know that people referred to it as a pizza pot pie. I just always called it oven grinders. I don't know. Chris in Buffalo Grove says, the double bacon champ from Checkers is delicious. Wait a minute. Checkers is still around?
Believe it or not, yes.
They didn't turn into, because I thought all Checkers turned into payday loans. Seriously, that's what they all turned into. They never none of them changed the facade. It looked exactly like a Checkers, except it was a payday loans.
Well, there's still a few out there.
Chris said, P.S., I got married at Chief O'Neill's, and my anniversary is next Sunday. Congratulations. Chief O'Neill's a lovely place. Great pub. Really, really great pub. 724 area code says, the Pittsburgh area went through one huge burger joint craze in 2005 to 2015. Not only did well-known places like Five Guys, Steak and Shake, Fat Burger, and Burgatory open up locations in the greater region for the first time, but tons of local joints jumped into the mix, too. Well, you know, listen, man, the burgers have become like, you know, even the, you know, the most badass cuisine has burgers on their menu now.
Like, yeah.
Even the fanciest restaurants, the best, you know, Michelin star awarded chefs are doing a burger. So here's Ron on WGN. Go ahead, Ron.
So I used to live in New Jersey for a short amount of time, and there was this pizza sandwich place called Nelly's. Great food. And I came across something that might have been a potential bane of my existence called the fat drunk guy. The fat drunk guy.
All right.
It was on a hoagie roll, cheesesteak, chicken fingers, mozzarella sticks, hamburger, meatball, bacon, Euro meat, egg, cheese, onion rings, curly fries, mayo, ketchup, lettuce, tomato.
That sounds ridiculous.
I mean, I purchased approximately three of them when I lived out there. After the third one is when I finally realized it wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, no. That sounds it's got bad idea written all over it. That's something that they feature on that show. What the hell is the show with Richmond? He's not on it anymore.
Oh, Man vs. Food.
Yeah, Man vs. Food. That's something that fat guy on that show would eat.
You know, I was really skeptical when I tried it. I was like, okay, you know, we'll just give this a whirl. I don't know what it was, Nick.
Yeah.
The flavors melded together.
Yeah.
And it was delicious.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Garlic bread hoagie roll.
Yeah. Oh. Were you sober?
At least one of the times I could say
okay.
I was. The other two, no, not so much.
I would think
I was,
so.
I was in the Bears. That was the last time the Bears win. Is all what 2010 when the Bears went to the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, Ron. Thanks, man. The fat drunk guy. Because you know who eats them? Fat drunk guys. That's who eats that. 708 area code. I would be curious about the Arby's Meat Mountain Sandwich, which is only found on their secret menu. Ooh. There you go, Tom. That's what you need to try. The Arby's Meat Mountain Sandwich. 773 area code says Velveeta on a burger. It's always fun to put Velveeta on a burger. It is. 804 area code says I put a Kraft single in my oatmeal. Melted yum. That sounds disgusting.
That's terrifying.
Eric in Pingree Grove says, I used to get the fried cheese melt all the time from Denny's, which is four cheese sticks and a grilled cheese. What the hell was I thinking? I've had that. It's great. You know what's amazing about that? Have you ever had that?
No.
The grilled cheese with the four mozzarella sticks in the middle of it? Is that how you would think that the mozzarella sticks would not stand up, would not hold up? I had it like three times. I've had that sandwich three times. The mozzarella sticks are they're it's the foundation, and you would think it would be a mess. It wasn't a mess. Hey Nick, a Chicago company recently purchased a Whataburger, so they should be coming your way soon. All right, I'll hold my breath. Okay, you ready for the next most unhealthy?
Mm-hmm.
It's out of McDonald's, everybody. The McDonald's Double Bacon Smokehouse Burger. 1,130 calories, 67 grams of fat, 27 of which are saturated, 1,920 milligrams of sodium, 64 grams of carb, 70 grams protein. Unbelievable. The Double Bacon Smokehouse Burger is the only burger from McDonald's to make this list. Is anyone else shocked? For many years, the Big Mac was thought to be the restaurant chain's most caloric offender, but it actually contains less than half of the calories and fat than you find in the Double Bacon Smokehouse Burger. Well, there's no bacon on a Big Mac.
That's what puts it over the edge.
But you know what? I mean, there was a time, and I don't think they're running this campaign anymore, but there was a time when you could put bacon on anything. You can go to McDonald's and just put bacon on it. Look, no matter what it was. So you could get bacon on a Big Mac. You could get bacon on your fries. All right, how about Wendy's? They come in next, number eight. Wendy's Barbecue Cheeseburger Triple. Nutrition here. Here we go. Calories. 1,150 calories. 73 grams of fat, 30 grams saturated. 1,900 milligrams of sodium, 57 grams of carb, 71 grams protein. Barbecue sauce may give any dish a sweet and smoky boost, but at what cost? Not only is this burger from Wendy's chock full of saturated fat, but it also packs about 15 grams of purely added sugar. You can have about 36 Reese's Pieces for the same amount of added sugar. You just put those on the sandwich. Dump a bunch of Reese's Pieces on the... on the sandwich. What the hell? Wendy's Barbecue Cheeseburger Triple. All right. Burger King's Bacon King. You see this, they show commercials for this one all the time.
Oh, yeah. It's constant.
The Burger King Bacon King. 1,150 calories, 79 grams of fat, 31 saturated. Oh, my God. Are you ready for the sodium? 2,150 milligrams of sodium. 2,150 milligrams of sodium in one sandwich. 49 gram carbs, 61 gram protein. Any burger called the Bacon King is bound to have a lot of calories, right? Not only is this BK burger loaded in calories, but it also contains a whopping 31 grams of saturated fat. For a healthier bacon burger option, opt for the restaurant chain's Bacon Cheeseburger, which clocks in at 320 calories, 16 grams of fat, 7 grams of saturated fat, and 710 milligrams of sodium. So instead of getting this thing that has 2,150 milligrams of sodium, that's completely insane. Completely insane. All right, how about this one? Coming in at number six, Wendy's Swawsome Bacon Cheeseburger Triple. Swawsome. S apostrophe the word awesome. Swawsome Bacon Cheeseburger Triple. 1,170 calories, 78 grams of fat, 32 saturated, 1,940 milligrams of sodium, 40 grams carbs, 76 grams of protein. This triple-decker sandwich from Wendy's has about as many calories as two of Dave's single burgers, with one clocking in at 570 calories. Not to mention, one Dave single contains 13 grams of saturated fat, which is less than half the amount of the saturated fat that's in the Swawsome Bacon Cheeseburger. Oh, man. All right. Well, here's what we're going to do. You want to hear? We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. What are the craziest fast food items you've ever tried? And we'll take a break here for the weather, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show, and we will tell you the top five most unhealthy burgers in the fast food world, the top five worst. So that is coming up after we take a break here for some weather. NIP, man, from Volume 4. Ah, yeah. So there's this picture sometimes I put on my Facebook page of this really cute girl wearing a leather jacket, and she's got a T-shirt on. And it just says, you can only trust yourself and the first six Black Sabbath records.
It's good stuff.
My motto. Nick DiGilio here, Triple A Thursday. We didn't get to hear three Sabbath songs. We only got to hear two. But maybe we'll do it again next week. Triple Play Thursday, we will do again next week. Yeah! 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich, the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. We're going to hit the top five most unhealthy fast food burgers ever. But let's go to the phones real quick before we jump into that. Here's Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
I used to work for Chickie's on 28th and Pulaski. They're not there any longer, but it was they were known for their Italian beef sandwiches. And I would take a hot tamale, put it in the middle of the beef sandwich with a little mustard and onion, and it was just beautiful.
You see, you put the tamale in the middle of the beef sandwich.
Yes, sir. It was a little heavy, but You know, when you're a kid, you can eat anything.
Well, of course, yeah, not anymore. But that sounds good. That sounds eatable.
It is.
Okay. All right, Tony. Thanks.
Thank you.
There you go. Okay. All right. Top five worst. Here we go. Number five, Carl's Jr., the half-pound guacamole bacon thick burger. Once again, the half-pound guacamole bacon thick burger from Carl's Jr., 1,200 calories, 89 grams of fat, 30 grams saturated. 1,990 milligrams of sodium, 51 grams carbs, 46 grams protein. Guacamole on a burger? It's no wonder this burger packs 1,200 calories and 89 grams of total fat. You might think the avocado contributes healthy fat to this meal, but when there's already a half pound of beef coupled with bacon, there is no need for additional fat. How about Burger King's Rodeo King? I don't know this one. Not familiar with the Rodeo King. Has anybody ever had a Rodeo King from Burger King? Burger King's Rodeo King, 1,250 calories, 82 grams of fat, 31 saturated. 2,270 milligrams of sodium. Absolutely insane. 69 grams carbs, 60 grams protein. Onion rings, beef, cheese, bacon. Sounds a bit excessive to us. It's no surprise that with all the extra salty sustenance, the sodium content of this burger is equal to how much you're supposed to consume at most in one day. If you really have a hankering for a burger, how about ordering the cheeseburger from BK, which only contains 280 calories, 13 grams of total fat, 6 grams of saturated fat. You could also split a side of onion rings with a friend if you feel like splurging. That's insane. All right, how about this one? Number three on the list. Wendy's Peppercorn Mushroom Melt Triple. Wendy's Peppercorn Mushroom Melt Triple. 1,290 calories, 86 grams of fat, 33 which is saturated. 1,820 milligrams of sodium, 50 grams carbs, 78 grams of protein. Note, let's see. It's the, how much meat is in here? It's about 3/4 of a pound of meat. No wonder there's 78 grams of protein. A typical bottled protein shake contains between 15 and 20 grams of protein. So eating this burger in one sitting is the equivalent of drinking three to five shakes. Wait, maybe some people are like, oh, I need more protein in my life.
Yeah, right?
Let's go get the peppercorn mushroom melt triple over at Wendy's.
I've got some skinless chicken breast at home. Nah, man.
No, man. No way. We got to get more protein. So let's get the peppercorn mushroom triple melt. Okay, number two, coming in at number two, the second worst, the second most unhealthy hamburger, fast food burger, Hardee's, real shocker. Hardee's two-third pound monster thick burger. Two-third pound monster thick burger from Hardee's. 1,300 calories, 90 grams of fat, 33 of which is saturated. Oh, my God. Are you ready for the sodium in this?
Rarely are. You know, I don't know.
3,140 milligrams of sodium.
Oh! Oh! Wow, man. I'm really glad I keep a container of rock salt to put on my burger.
53 grams carbs, 76 grams protein. 2 1/3 pound beef patties comprise the majority of this burger's insides. Another 4 strips of bacon, 3 slices of cheese, mayonnaise, all on a burger with a whopping 90 grams of total fat. If you order the half-pound cheeseburger from Hardee's, you get half the calories at 640 and one-third of total fat with 33. And by the way, that's number two on the list, sporting over 3,100 milligrams of sodium. Burger King takes the crown here for unhealthiest burger. The Triple Stacker King. 1,370 calories, 93 grams of fat, 40 grams saturated, 2,300 milligrams sodium, 51 grams carbs, 85 grams protein. Finally, the unhealthiest fast food burger of them all is Burger King's Triple Stacker King. This burger costs you about two-thirds of your daily allotment of calories. One burger, two-thirds of your daily allotment of calories. Also, about 2 days' worth of saturated fat and a day's worth of sodium. Did you ever think that all three Burger King burgers would make the unhealthiest fast food list? So, there it is. Wow.
It's just shocking.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, the sodium, I mean, that one from, where's it from here? The one from Hardee's, the Monster Thick Burger, with over 3,100 milligrams of sodium. That's completely insane. Well, there they are. You'll either want to stay away from those burgers, or if they sounded tasty to you, then there you go. Have some fun with that. And if anybody tried that, I'm still curious to see. I guess nobody tried the insane Cheeto sandwich from KFC.
I'll do that after my my trip to Arby's.
Yeah, man. Good. You got to go to Arby's, man. Get the beef and cheddar. Finest sandwich ever. I'm tired of all this boring fast food. I want some Cheetos and some Cheeto sauce. And I need a cheetah to bring it to me, an animated cheetah. On a skateboard because he's hip. He's trying to be like us, the kids.
I mean, I feel like the commercials are just getting more insane.
I didn't think, honestly, Tom, I didn't think it was real. I was like, this has got to be fake, right? And then it's like, no, it's real. There's a chicken Cheetos sandwich with Cheetos on it, and a Chester the Cheetah on a skateboard animated delivers it to a bunch of idiot kids at a skate park. That's what we're watching.
I thought we reached the peak when they did the RoboCop.
Yeah. Like, well, that's pretty funny. I thought that the fact that it was Peter Weller is also amazing. All right. Hey, tomorrow is Friday, so we'll have all of our regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday. We got Jeff Tuckman coming in. I'm not going to tell you what we're giving away. Jeff's bringing it in. I got nothing to do with what we're giving away tomorrow. I got nothing at all. I'm going to distance myself as far as possible from what Jeff Tuckman is bringing in to give away tomorrow. But anyway, he'll be here, and we're going to have a visit from the Bad Apple Bar and Restaurant, plus all the regular Friday features.